June 11th, 2015. First item is adoption of 2015 International Building Codes. And Neil Bombay from Planning and Zoning and Inspections is here. So. And Rick Dvorak.
Yeah, I just give a broad overview of what we're trying to move towards here today with the adoption of the four codes. Building, mechanical, plumbing, and electric. It's a process we typically go through once every 3 years to match up with the code cycles. Would just say that state code has recently mandated that local jurisdictions have to adopt the state mechanical code and the state plumbing code by the end of next year. And we would plan to do this by reference with the ordinance that we're proposing. The state adopts the same code that Johnson County has been for since their existence, so it's really a non-issue for us. It would, in fact, make it easier for future code adoptions that we would not have to come out here every 3 years and specifically adopt it. Whenever the state would adopt it, we would just automatically be on the same code. The state's language regarding electrical is a little less specific in that it doesn't necessarily mandate that we have the same code. It just says that we cannot be less strict. And this, again, has been the same for a number of years now. We have been copying their code. And so we're just going to do a straight-up reference, which is, again, easier. We wouldn't have to go through the action motions every 3 years to do it. And so that really only leaves us with a building code left to address. And we would still maintain a number of local amendments there. I think we've got about, there's 10 pages worth of stuff here, but we probably have about 15 code sections that would not be administrative in nature. And a lot of them are things that we are continuing from the past. I would say that most notably there is something that I'd like to take out called the accessibility standards. I would only say that it would be controversial because it kind of sounds controversial to remove something titled accessibility, but it's not that we're trying to mess with the federal ADA standards at all. It's something that we decided to adopt locally and try 5 years ago, which I would like to just say that I don't think is working out as well as we thought it would have. And it's not mainstream enough, we couldn't get other jurisdictions to enforce it.
Can I stop you there, Neil? Can I ask a couple of questions?
Sure.
I assume then that the cities of Iowa City, Corville, North Liberty, and Linn County never adopted that anyway, right?
No, this was brought forth by a member of the Home Builders Association, Iowa City chapter. And Iowa City did adopt it with our, along with us.
Right. And Corville,
it was kind of the understanding that North Liberty and Corville would come along, at least at the time I had that impression. They didn't.
They never did.
And
okay.
Have no plans to.
And so does Iowa City want to undo this as well?
Yeah. No, they're not going to take it out. They're going to keep it in.
Oh, so what are the eight accessible design elements that are mandatory?
So there's eight. There's eight items that we declared mandatory. I would describe them somewhere between universal design, which would be up here, and minimum code standards. And there's just a number of things. I guess I could go, I provided a list. I don't know if you've got it or had much time to look through it. It's about 2 pages worth. But basically, I would describe it as a way to make a house readily adaptable, perhaps, to future handicap accessibility.
Right.
Putting in a header over a door that, you know, the header size would accommodate a larger door. But one of the problems I have is that the code as written allows you to put cripples in to shorten that door width to the point where I think it wouldn't be much harder for somebody to change that door if we didn't even have the standard to begin with. But yet we're making everyone go through some of these steps for something that's, I mean, I'd be interested to see the numbers. I don't know how many of these are really being adapted for future use. Because part of the problem would be it only requires one bedroom and one bathroom on the main floor. It doesn't really specify which one. So it's kind of guesswork down the road.
Well, I thought some of your things were interesting, like the idea of a lower electrical box. If I'm a person that uses a wheelchair, of course I want that. But if I've got kids at home, right, I don't want that.
Yeah, that one in particular, we probably have complaints from the danger side of it, from electricians and maybe a kid getting into it standpoint. That's a very tough one to call out for a contractor that's out of the area that would typically, you know, put it up here. We come to an inspection. We have no option other than to really give them a warning. It's too much work to lower an electric panel once it's established height-wise.
It's just one of those things that until you've done it for a couple of years, you don't necessarily think of all the repercussions.
Right. I think we dove into it without...
But Iowa City has this, and they're not changing.
Correct.
So I believe we should mandate a universal design. So isn't this backpedaling on that?
Yeah, it's not getting any closer to universal design, that's for sure.
I mean, we're all going to end up with injuries and illness and age and need, you know.
Yeah.
Even my house is incredibly poorly designed for anybody with joint injury.
In my opinion, and, you know, I think the other building inspection staff would feel the same, that we're too middle of the road. I'm not necessarily voicing support for universal design, but this, what we have, is too much, but yet not enough. I mean, it's just in the middle. I think we either should be all in or all out.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just some good intentions behind it, but I just don't think it's effective enough to really accomplish much accessibility-wise.
Mike, do you have another question, Janelle?
No, so this is exactly what Iowa City has.
It's word for word.
And does the Reverend Bob Welsh know that you're proposing getting rid of this?
That's why I said it'd be controversial.
And our own livable and our own livable communities.
Yeah.
And our disability community.
I brought it to our Home Builders Association and our.
Yeah, I don't care what they think, actually. I could care less what the home builders think. But I do care what the disability community and the senior community thinks.
We don't have their approval.
So Neil, there's 8 things. I only printed out 4. I don't know what happened there.
Our memo in our packet only has 4.
Yeah, but weren't there more than 8 things total? So
no, there were just 8 items.
There were just 8 items that were adopted in the first place. Mm-hmm. Okay.
See, this came out of the housing task force.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we worked on it for a year trying to find a compromise, because there were some that wanted universal design completely, like Bob, and there were some, like Glenn, that really couldn't find that happy place, you might say, between the two, because they, meaning home builders, didn't really want to require that as a law, like some states do right now, like I think it's Arizona, some of the retirement states require that every house has to be a universal design. So this was a compromise we came up with. We voted on it, and we recommended it, and then Glenn took it to home builders. And then I brought it to you. I took it to Swisher. I took it to other places, too. That's just a little more background.
Well, it seems like there's a couple of them there's a couple that really haven't come into play much.
Correct.
There's a couple where you've seen problems with. There's a couple where you haven't seen problems with.
Okay.
So do you feel it's important to do it all as one piece, or do you think it makes more sense to request to repeal the couple that have caused you problems?
Well, I guess in the grand sense of being mainstream, I would recommend taking them all out rather than piece by piece, even though it would make it easier for us. At least we do have Iowa City out there enforcing it. You know, in theory, somebody that built a house in Iowa City and then comes here would know the regulation.
Right.
More so than again, kind of being in the middle ground.
You know, for me, I think I want them to be handicap accessible as much as possible, and meaning that they don't have to have a step if they want to enter a house. The backings for handrails. I know you don't always know where those may need to go, but I think if they're near a stool or a sink or whatever, or a bathtub, I think we should have some something back there to anchor to for a handrail of some sort. Now, on the other hand, when you start putting the headers in that go to that extra cost and put that in, and that can be put in any time if they're going to readapt that to a door rather than having put that in initially and maybe never, ever using that. That gets to be quite a cost increase in a house, things like that. So I think there are good positives, but there are also negatives in some of these requirements.
Neil, I sit on both the Task Force on Aging and Livable Communities boards. This is going to be a problem. It can be. One thing I learned is in December of 2014, the last baby boomer turned 50. We are an aging community, even though Johnson County is younger than most counties because of our university, but we are aging. And as we can see on the board here, most of us, if we haven't turned 50, we will be doing so shortly. And I what's that?
Pretty soon.
Yeah, you being the youngest. But I think our community demands this, that we have the most accessible housing in the state. I mean, and so however we can do that.
Well, it wouldn't be by taking all this out.
Exactly. And so I'm not sure. I know I don't like this. Okay. The way that you're proposing this, and I know the people that sit on those two boards are going to have some issues with it. So I think, I don't know what the answer is here.
Well, oops. My alternate to this would be, I mean, even though it seems like you only got half of it, there are eight.
Yeah.
We have them in our amendments now.
Yeah.
If you're not in favor of taking them out, I'll put it right back in the way it has been. Yeah. Again, Iowa City does enforce it. We would be similar to them.
Yeah.
It's not an all or nothing type thing for me. Yeah. And really, I'm not in favor of changing any or trying to alter it. I mean, you put yourself out on an island with something that would be considered Johnson County standards, and that's, you know, that's really not what I want to do. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, we have livable communities for successful aging is an advisory to the Board of Supervisors and has all kind of work groups. I don't really think it's fair to be talking about this without having them in the room and their opinions. That's what we have won awards for, to be a county that is supportive and visionary in elder issues and disability issues. So, I mean, I'd like to run this past our own advisory committees, but I can predict what they're going to say, that we should be at universal design, certainly not backpedaling where we've been. And so, I mean, committee meets monthly. I think they should be advised of this and brought into the loop.
I guess I would say, though, I mean, if this board doesn't seem like it would move that direction, even if you had that support, I'm not adamant that it comes out. It was just our proposal that it comes out. And, you know, we'd like the input if you had it, but we don't really want, I don't want to hold the rest of the process up for this. I mean, it has been in place for us, so it's not.
Andy, I'm not, for some reason, I can't, do we have
a, only getting half of it.
I'm not getting anything on the IQM2. Is it loaded in there?
Yeah, but only the first page.
I can't get anything.
I have Food Policy Council as my first.
It shows four. I've got the eight because I'd gone over and saw him and visited about
it. I don't even have that.
We'll get a copy.
I'll make a copy.
I think.
Come on back, Josh.
Is that the one page? Is that where we got screwed up?
I did it.
I wonder why I.
Where do we look?
When I click on agenda packet, I have nothing.
I got it. Food policy.
I don't even have that.
I got it. That's all I have is food policy.
Mine just says blank.
Oh, so I did. I just used split view. Did you try split view?
No.
Try split view.
Maybe I
don't know why that'd make a difference. Click on the event.
I mean,
I always like the split view, so I could.
And then try split view. But you.
But it's also showing up for me in this version. It's not split view, but there's the ordinance.
And then it's building code information. If you click on that, you'll only get the first page, though.
Oh, okay. And
there I am. I was in the right one here.
Yeah, I still don't have anything. It's just blank.
Huh.
It's weird.
That is weird.
In the anyway, I guess the point I wanted to make, which I can't make very well without this coming up, is I'd like to have you take a really good look at all four and say, is there something that's really problematic? Because, like, as I looked at number three, for example, and I don't have all eight in front of me here, I can see where number three might be a real problem. And maybe
the electrical panel.
Yeah.
Height.
Yeah. And maybe we need to actually go to that group and say, this is a real problem. Or maybe you don't think it is. I don't know. But
again, I wouldn't target any single one of these as problematic. I mean, I don't think it's detrimental to a building in any way to put this stuff
well,
in.
Well, but if it's detrimental to safety, then that's a problem.
Holds up the process and can be kind of...
Well, I'll give you a reverse. My house, I'm 5 foot... two, and my electrical panel is so high that I have to get a stool to get on it. I am normal height for a woman. So without regulation, they just put it at the top of the ceiling, and because whoever built the, you know, downstairs was 6 foot something, that's not safe for me. Because in an emergency, I have to go find a freaking stool in order to shut off the power of my house.
Well, that's probably too high too then. I mean, aren't they supposed to be at a certain 4 foot or something?
No, I guess I don't know what you're...
I'm just saying, yeah. Without regulation, they just put it wherever the heck they want.
I'm surprised it's that high.
That was my original view.
It would be abnormally high if that's the case.
What's that?
I get one of those back.
Oh, yeah.
They're right here.
There's one there, that number two, the switch and outlet requirements. That's one I would like to see changed in some manner. I'll give you an example. In my house, I've got a bow window. So by this, you can't have an outlet under that bow window, which is actually a nice place when you want to plug something else in, vacuums or whatever else. Otherwise, it has to be clear off the other side at a height that is completely away from where you want that. I think you have to be able to make an exception or be able to have an additional plug. Other than
or you
two
could
on
have
either
an
side.
Plug. I would interpret this that you could have an additional one.
All right, you do. And it could be interpreted either way.
Yeah, I see that.
Because it says other locations. So to me, it's like you want it under that bow window or something similar that someone may have.
So the biggest, so there's not anything. There's not anything that appears to be problematic from a safety standpoint, or we've been doing this and we found that this really is causing a lot of problems for people who are already in these homes. It's really just a thing the builders are going, why do I have to do this?
Right.
Okay.
I would say the one exception would be the panel height. I think more behind from the perspective that they don't want to do it, so maybe they're coming up with reasons why they don't like it. They're throwing the kids thing out. I mean, I don't know that that's caused any one problem in Johnson County.
Okay. I mean, I guess the important thing is that whatever decision we make, it's not because we're having huge problems. It's just a matter of what do we want to do with this.
The way I look at it is, unless we're going to piecemeal, and it doesn't sound like you want to do that, if it's an all or nothing, I'd rather leave it the way it is. That's where I am. If you want to go down that road,
yeah,
we can go and piecemeal this. But if it's kind of an all or nothing, let's just...
I don't want to touch it. I either want it in or out. And it
bam. Oh, given that, I'd rather leave it in.
Okay.
But if you ever have something that you think is actually causing a problem for the health or safety of people who are in these houses, then I think we need to know it. But it doesn't sound like that's actually happening.
I think it's more like, I think somebody said, it's more of the contractors doing
right.
It from out of county, out of city.
Right.
So you just have to redraw all the plans.
The maximum height for a breaker box in this electrical panel is 4.5 feet, right? Didn't you just tell me that's where they should be building them anywhere and not at 6?
No, that's not typical height. That's lower than normal.
See, because I think what you're saying on this one is
so it's okay.
The top of it can only be that high, where otherwise it could be interpreted the bottom would be that high.
Yeah.
So basically what you're saying, it can be no higher than that at the top of the panel.
Right. It's about 1.5 feet lower than normal. Most electricians will put it in a nice comfortable range, which would probably be about chest high to me.
So should we give Neil a quick, I mean, I'd rather just leave this all in. Is that the way everybody else?
Yes.
I am, but I'd like to see him, you know, just, you know, allow that.
And we do. So again, I wouldn't be in favor of touching that. I think we would interpret that they could do both if they...
As long as you meet the minimum requirement, you could do something else.
Yeah, you can put any number of ones in on the floor if you wanted to.
Alternative locations may be approved by the building official.
It says other locations.
Which would even be, I assume, true for universal design. As long as you had the ones that met the code, you could have any number of ones on the floor that were unreachable or whatever to the typical wheelchair person.
I mean, so I'd...
You have the 12-foot between...
I'd just as soon save your time here. I think it sounds like everybody wants to just leave it in.
Okay.
So the consensus is to leave it, so...
Yeah.
Fine. I didn't know where you wanted to go with the rest of the stuff. Like I said, there are more than a dozen other code changes. I don't know that one probably warranted the most discussion. There are some that I would say are notable because of...
But they're changing across the board, not... I mean, these aren't... Okay, let me back up. It's changing in an international building code and a state building code... And then in certain areas, ours has other requirements. We're going to keep our other requirements, right?
So we will reference the state code for electrical, mechanical, and plumbing.
Okay.
We will use all of the amendments that they have and none of ours on those three trades, which, again, really isn't much of a change from what we do now.
Okay.
Especially electrical, it's identical to that.
So electrical, mechanical, and plumbing will be state code.
Yes.
And it's... This is what we're already doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
How do you notify an out of town builder? I know that it should be up to them to check on what your codes are, but do you notify them? Is there a stipulation somewhere in the paperwork you hand out saying?
I mean, we put it on as many places as we can. We do not send out a mailer. I mean,
because
we
wouldn't.
No, I just think if they picked up a permit to build, then some kind of. Notice that there is...
With every permit application that we sent out, every approved permit, there's a accompanying paperwork on that that displays all of the codes that we currently enforce.
It's up to them to read it then. So.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons behind this state mandate to get, you know, they want everybody to be on the state mechanical and plumbing is so you don't have so much moving from city to city and worrying about different code. You should know it's always the same. Although, we do have this... Our own building amendments.
Do you want
as most jurisdictions would?
Do you want him to run through those real quick? There's 12 of them, I think you said.
Is there any that's significant? That's not.
I would say that there's two that are significant, safety-wise. But it's something that we've done in the past. If anybody knows that, all residences by code are required to have sprinkler systems. No matter where they're installed, single-family dwellings. And it's been that way for a couple code cycles. We deleted that out, as do most other local jurisdictions. There's just no way that I believe we can require that. There's another one as far as...
Who does require it?
I think...
Residential? Iowa City made some changes to... The ceilings in the basement and added a little more drywall or something.
No.
But they never really did that. Hiawatha did something like that, but that's the only two I even talked about.
Marion, I believe, is the only one that I can recall, and possibly Cedar Rapids, wrote something in their amendments that put a certain size requirement as far as, and it was really high, that said any house over, say, 10,000 square feet has to have a sprinkler system. All those others would be exempt. And they basically, to my understanding, did that so that they could say to the ISO report company that would come out and grade us every 5 years that they still enforce that code section. But it's pretty standard for, and even the Iowa State Code takes this out.
Yeah, I would agree not. I would agree not having in residential houses. But I think when you get into a situation with you have a home for people with disabilities, things like that, that's where they're housed and you know, as a group, like group home type settings, things like that, that I think that's required. But I think we already do that.
Well, we would. This I probably didn't describe it well enough, that this deletion to the sprinkler system is only for single-family dwellings. Okay. Would not apply in any way to businesses, residences, 12-plexes.
But they don't... I mean, nobody does that anymore anyway. I mean, people with disabilities just... I mean, Rick's already run into this with code. They just live in houses. They don't license. So, you know, we're I mean, it's never going to work that way anyway. They're not going to do a licensed facility.
So on... So the International Building Code, International Residence Code, item 1A here, has to do with the size of outbuilding needing a permit is going up. But our section that exempts hoop buildings would remain.
Yes.
So when we adopt their language, we're going to add back in our language, right?
Well, we are going to rescind the previous ordinance that that allowed the exception to hoop buildings and add the exception in here as far as, you know, the same language.
I don't know how you like to use it, but it looks like you just do.
We've deleted membrane structures that are no larger than 7,200 square feet, meet manufacturer specifications, located on properties AARR, and are used for private homeowner plant growing operations and wholesale of plant products are exempt from permits.
Oh, wait. Well, now it's so not there.
Enforcement-wise, we're the exact same on it.
So, because I'm confused by your memo here, we're going to rescind what we had and adopt theirs, but we're going to put that line back in there so that we still have an exemption for greenhouses, hoop buildings?
Item number 16 was added to the list of exemptions. The building code has a list of exemptions. They have 15. We need to add in number 16, hoop structures. The previous ordinance that we adopted referenced our previous building ordinance, which is no longer going to be in effect.
But all I'm trying to get at is, when we rescind what we currently have, adopt the new one, we are going to also put back in this exemption for greenhouses and hoop buildings.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, that will maintain.
Yeah, there's nothing being removed here that we have, at least pre-Mike here, have supported.
No, it's just been rewritten. And similarly, if some of you may remember, I was before you as far as pool barrier requirements. We came up with an ordinance that said a cover was equivalent to a fence. You know, that was a separate ordinance that will, again, be rescinded because it's going to reference an older ordinance. That's put in here. The enforcement will be the same. We will approve a cover in lieu of a fence.
I want to back up to where Rod said that we didn't enforce the licensed facilities to have sprinkler systems. Didn't we not make that facility, off, I don't remember the name of the street, off of Buckmeyer Bend, when they put that in, didn't we make them put in a sprinkler system?
Yes, they had a sprinkler system.
That's what I thought.
But all I'm saying
group
is...
group home has to have a sprinkler system.
But they're not going to call themselves a group. I mean, they don't do that anymore, so...
But we still have it in our definitions in the zoning ordinance that we have provision for a group home. It's like the hospice. I'm working with them now on a group
right.
home.
But that's the problem is our code referenced state licensed group home and they no longer license these. So that's why the one out the winery, we had to like create an interpretation of that. So does that need to be cleaned up while we're doing this?
Probably in the zoning ordinance.
Yeah.
The definitions.
Right.
Well, see, the problem is what a lot of people are going to tell you, if you get into the whole, I know these aren't fights you want to fight, Neil, and it's not your deal necessarily, but if you get into the whole, like, disability rights group, they're going to say, this is just three of us living together. We don't, you know, it's a house, just like it'd be a house if, you know, the three of us lived together, and that's their argument. You know, we don't need special codes or whatever. So I guess it's like trying to find them and put that on isn't going to work. I mean, they don't want it, for one. For two, I don't know it's going to work. I mean,
well,
we'd have to find them.
If you take the autism out of the winery, they're going to have separate dwelling units. So that is basically multifamily housing.
Right.
But for people with disabilities.
Right.
That's way different than three of us are veterans and we're living in a single family house, even though we're not relatives.
It's just that's what
but
people
those
are trying to do.
But those are separate dwelling units.
Yeah, that's just what people are trying to do for the most part. And if you want to regulate it, you're never going to get there because that's their whole point. They don't want to be treated differently.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue the fact that that situation that they
I'm
should
not
sure. have to
follow. Maybe I'm a little
well,
off
but
here,
I do think we're going to have to think about that a lot, especially in sprinklers, because people with disabilities and hospice and whatnot, a sprinkler system makes sense to me, and that is different than a single family housing unit.
I think it depends on what is built, because if people, well, for one, you got two issues. One is, do people want it? But two is, if people could move out and then a family could move in, then you're not going to want to have some kind of stigmatizing thing that the family would go, well, I'm never going to buy this house.
I understand,
right?
But you're basically running a nursing home.
I think if that's what they're doing, then they should be licensed as a nursing home.
Well, at least sprinkled.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
because we're going to pull out this sprinkling single-family homes, but that doesn't pull out sprinkling multifamily homes, right?
No, they're not even that close related at all. Anything that would be a single-family dwelling, I guess you could have something where one veteran, you know, had some tenants, but it's in most situations. So say the Buckmeyer Bend one, that was easily classified into the commercial code. We had no resistance for that at all. Even when we required the sprinkler system, they have done other ones throughout the state, and they knew they were going to have to do
it. My family member, I'd want it if they're, you get people with disabilities or people who are dying, I mean, who can't get themselves out of a situation.
Yeah. I guess I would just say the removal or the addition of this section here wouldn't address any problems that you guys are discussing.
Okay.
Right.
I mean,
but we're going to have to put that on the list to start working out because our code references state licensed facilities, and that no longer exists.
That's an zoning.
Yeah, I think the issue you got into was with the zoning ordinance.
Right. And it's going to get worse before it gets better.
So I have one question on sprinklers, and this, I think, happened before I was on the board. Isn't there a new hotel coming down on Highway 1 in an old barn? And does that have sprinklers or not?
I don't know what's going on. RJ worked with them.
It's not a hotel. It's a country inn. It's like a glorified bed and breakfast.
Okay.
I would say that ordinarily, if that would have come through, yes, I would require a sprinkler system.
Yes.
But it was we did a specific amendment to the ordinance that had specific criteria that they have to meet, which I assume they did, to avoid the sprinkler system.
Well, they haven't finished.
They haven't done it yet.
Okay.
The financing was a little bit of an issue, so they're kind of on hold.
But I know we limited the number of bedrooms.
Right.
I think there was maybe even a registry and all that stuff. I don't recall what it was. I worked on it some. But
yeah,
otherwise, typically, that type of thing
could
would be sprinkled. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else? I mean, I could go down one by one if you want. It'd be pretty dry, but I'm not trying to sneak anything past you here. But again, most of it's, even the sprinkler stuff, is something we've had for a while. It's just a continuation of that.
I'm down to item H, so this is storm shelters for schools.
Yep.
Where is this?
So our current ordinance requires storm shelters for school or does not?
This is a good one to bring up because this is something that is new to the code. Number H under memorandum is new to the code. So before we got to this step, back up a little bit, I got together with Iowa City, Coralville, North Liberty, and Solon to discuss the amendments that we would have to try to get them as close as possible to one another, at least know what the other jurisdictions were doing on the major issues. And this is something that Iowa City brought up, and I don't think anybody, including them, had any knowledge of it until they were directly asked, because they were going to get a school that would have fallen under this. And what the problem with this is, it was a new section added to the code we felt was a little bit vague as to when a storm shelter would be required. And they didn't want to get into something where you do an addition to a building that didn't have any storm shelter previously, and you would have to, therefore, put a storm shelter to accommodate the entire school. Especially they had some temporary trailer-type detached school buildings, if you can picture those. How we kind of interpreted the code is that if you were to put one of those trailers on your school, you would then have to accommodate the entire student body with a storm shelter. I mean, there's just no way that could...
If you build it brand new, do you have to build storm shelters?
Yes.
Okay. So if you... Isn't there something like if you change the structure by X percentage, then you have to do these other things?
I think this new section was just vague enough that it wasn't clear. And since Iowa City was going to get one, they brought it to us and say, would you be willing to adopt this language? Even though I don't know that this would affect us, it could, it couldn't. But they came up with a language that they felt comfortable enforcing, that they didn't feel it was overly strict or prohibitive to put in a school addition on. And so we just took their exact language and put it in our code.
But I don't see the language then. Where is it there?
The language is on a separate document. So this thing titled Memorandum is a brief overview of the 10-page document.
Okay.
You know, our zoning ordinance on commercial and industrial buildings, if they go over 50% increase in size, they have to bring them in total compliance. Stormwater, sensitive areas, street, paved, all this stuff. That's in the zoning ordinance for commercial industrial only.
Okay. So if you adopt a new language, when would they have to have a storm shelter then?
New structures. A new building. And then also, I believe, an addition would have to accommodate the added portion. So if I put an addition on and had 100 people, I would have to have a storm shelter for that 100, not for the entire school. It wouldn't prohibit you from doing the entire school. It just wouldn't require it.
The reason it stuck out to me is there was controversy with the new Tiffin school, which... is in Tiffin city limits. I mean, they're all not in city limits, but they're being annexed. So they went through all that and then realized they hadn't built in the storm shelter. Then it was like, we can't afford it and we can't do this. And there was a lot of drama around that. And it seemed like to me that should not be negotiable.
I don't.
With the way our weather patterns have changed, if you're going to put a bunch of kids in a place, they ought to be able to be protected from tornadoes.
Right. I don't think this specific code section would have given them relief in that scenario at all. Okay. I don't know much about that. But
all right. So because it's a brand new building, they would have had to put the storm shelter on. And if they just added four classrooms, they'd have to put enough for those four classrooms.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Any others that we want to discuss?
Well, I'll probably come in, since the consensus is to leave it, is my understanding. I'll probably come in and get on the agenda next week to set the public hearing, because it's been to the Board of Appeals already. It doesn't go to the Planning and Zoning, so... I'll get with Andy to set that on next week or two.
This one that requires a publication, is not?
Yes.
It does, okay.
We can dot by reference. You don't have to have the whole code in there. the amendments
we
have to be.
We have to print this portion.
Yeah, that's what I said. The amendments have to be, but the code itself isn't.
Right.
That's thousands of pages.
So when it's all said and done, what we would be adopting is not any less stringent than what we already have.
Correct.
And the things we've carved out will still be there.
Yeah. I mean, we've done this before where we've had our own amendments that carried forward.
Yeah, in fact, this should really be the easiest one so far that, every 3 years we have to come here and say, well, we want 20 amendments in the building. We have about 5 in the electrical,
right.
10 in the mechanical. From here on out, it should just be building, 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 because all the other ones are references. Rick mentioned that, I think one of you had already brought up, we were going to raise the requirements. Right now, anything over 144 square feet for a detached building requires a permit. We're going to raise that to 200. So you've got that. Now anything over 200 would require a permit. It's not anything that we necessarily changed, but the code changed, and we decided this to change with it.
So you can build a pretty good size shed and not have a permit.
Right.
In the country, it kind of makes sense. But in the cities, like Swisher, when they adopt our code, they don't adopt that.
No, Swisher does want. Swisher has been on 200. We do the inspections for the city of Swisher, and they never want it to go that low. The state code was always 200, so now it'll help that we will be on the same square footage number as them.
Is Iowa City going to keep the...
They will stay at 144.
144.
North Liberty has been on 200. I don't recall what Coralville was. So there's going to be a little variation there no matter what we do. I think it makes more sense to go with the 200 for a county jurisdiction. But, I mean, if you guys think
people
otherwise,
have bigger
know,
mowers and stuff like that, trailers.
It's just a pretty small building to worry about on a large lot.
Yeah.
Walk out there, there's no...
Well, my argument had been when we talked about the hoop buildings and your predecessor said, well, next they'll want a chicken coop, a goat house. And I'm like, fine. What do I care? What
building?
I care about is how close is it to an occupied building. If you build your goat house and it burns down, that's unfortunate, but that's not my issue. My issue is how close is it to your house or your neighbor's house? And that, to me, seems what we should be concerned about, not the fact that people want to build chicken houses and goat houses. So this would be a 10 by 20.
Yeah.
But how far away does that have to be from an occupied structure?
If it doesn't require a permit? Oh, so either way, I guess, you could have it adjacent to... the code wouldn't require any separation from a detached building. If it was a garage, anything within 3 feet would have to have drywall on the garage side.
So I can put my goat house that without a building permit right up against my house.
You can put your goat house with a building permit right up against your house. No? Not if it's a goat barn. Just specific, you know, because of...
But that's
probability of a fire happening in a garage. There's specific reference to a garage protection.
But that's currently the case with 12 by 12.
Yeah.
Too. All we're doing is making it 10 by 20.
You know, adjacent to a property line,
right.
Though, you now have that 144 to 200 not getting a permit where it was previously and needing to meet setbacks. Now, up to 199, I can put right on the line instead of 4 feet back.
You can?
Because it wouldn't need a permit. We wouldn't regulate it. Right now, I can put a 144-square-foot building right on the line.
But I can't put a 200-square-foot building right on the line.
No, because it has to meet setbacks today.
Today.
But this will change that.
Well, now I think we've got a problem. Because,
okay.
I mean, the vast majority of our housing is urban in the North Corridor. It's not what you would call rural. So if they're going to put a 10 by 20 building right on the line with no setbacks whatsoever, right now they can only do a 12 by 12 with no setbacks. And who has 144, Iowa City, Coralville?
I don't recall Coralville. Iowa City is 144. and North Liberty is 200. I'm sure about those two.
I mean, 144 is kind of a standard thing that you buy at Lowe's or Menards. You know, it's a kind of a kit.
Normal shed.
I would say, not that I don't know it would make much difference to you guys. We have been on 200 before. This number kind of seems to be something that has bounced around quite a bit every code cycle. It's been at 120, it's been at 200, it went back to 144, now it's at 200. I mean, they just can't seem to agree where this number needs to be. Our thinking was, we were on 200 before, we kind of liked it, it's a nice round number, I don't see a ton of danger,
so can these,
and we were wanting to go with 200 and stay there.
These can be electrified though, right?
If it had electrical, it would require a permit.
Oh, it would, okay.
Yeah. So we're talking about detached, single story.
No electrical.
I mean, it's, non-habitable, no electrical.
Okay.
I can't remember. And it's specific to tool, storage sheds, playhouses, that kind of thing. It can't be any type of garage wouldn't qualify.
Right.
Any type of barn wouldn't qualify. I mean, it's got to be basically your garden shed, tool shed.
But that's not the easiest thing in the world to enforce.
No.
Right.
Sure. My neighbors had a playhouse that was fully electric with a television and everything, air conditioner, but they ran it by an extension cord. So, and it was two-story playhouse. Coolest thing in the world, but nobody seemed to care.
Sounds like something they wouldn't have called us for a permit either.
I guess if you're comfortable with it, and you know, you go for a while and you find out it doesn't work, you let us know and we change it.
Yeah,
I'm all right with it.
It's one of those things. I can't specifically recall which jurisdictions did what because there are some split. I even went to the northern county and cities to feel them out too. There was more people already on 200 than I thought.
We've had people complain about, you know, the building right on the lot line, but I don't think it's so much been the size. It's just been the one neighbor's trying to be a jerk to the other neighbor.
I assume that person would complain about the 144 as well. But.
Because that's a solid. You want me? Okay.
Yep. Okay.
Anything else?
Next.
Thanks, Neil.
Yep.
Okay, next item is a proposed amendment to the Unified Development Ordinance relating to sensitive areas and stormwater management.
Hello.
Josh, I didn't know if Kate was going to be here or not.
No, Kate is not here today.
Okay.
And the computer fell asleep. So, I guess as we get started here, hang on. IT puts really complicated codes.
Hold on.
Yes.
While you're doing that, have you been introduced to my new assistant?
Just by email.
Yeah, Josh, you need to tell yourself your name and your title.
Oh, well, I'm still the assistant planner.
Till 22nd.
Yeah, next week, where I will be the...
I don't know. it's the
assistant zoning administrator and sustainability coordinator. So,
what's the acronym for that?
Congratulations.
Yeah, so the AGASC. Thank you.
Glad you
much.
Applied.
Okay, so. That's not it. So, approximately 3 or 4 months ago. Yes. Okay.
We're getting old, as Mike pointed out a while ago, so we can't see that. Thank you.
Okay, we're all there. All right. So about 3 or 4 months ago, during a board work session, the Planning and Zoning Department was asked to take a look at what would be needed if we were to amend our sensitive areas ordinance and stormwater management ordinance to be more strict, to bring in almost nearly all subdivisions with a mechanism where an application could be waived by the zoning administrator in certain instances. So we looked at that. And in order to do that, we needed to make a few changes. Essentially, what it was, in the sensitive areas ordinance portion, it said, you know, all residential subdivisions or re-subdivisions of four lots or more, ag zone parcels subject to a conditional use permit, and then anything that is dealing with a site plan or a re-subdivision of any commercial, industrial, AWDRR, which is landfills and composting facilities, and then the any manufactured housing districts. They need to comply with the sensitive areas ordinance. So there was there seemed to be a lot of conversation, and we can talk about that more today. If we wanted to make the sensitive areas ordinance applicable to all subdivisions, subdivisions such as two lots or more, or three lots or less, or three lots or more, how we would change that. But just for argument's sake, what it would look like, and this could be changed any way that the board would want, of course, I put in, so it would be applicable to all subdivisions, all ag zone parcels subject to a conditional use permit, and all commercial, industrial, public, AWDRR, and RMH zone parcels shall comply with this chapter unless there is that determination by the planning and zoning administrator that compliance is not necessary. So
that's what we told you to go write.
Correct.
When we had our work session, we directed to see this.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of discussion about if you weren't moving dirt around, could we exempt it? If all you were doing was splitting off the house in a farmstead split, who had the authority? Could we exempt that? So that seems to imply that the planning and zoning administrator or duly authorized representative could exempt that.
And in the ordinance amendment, we rewrote that in. So we were asked to consider to make all, for the sensitive areas ordinance, applicable to all subdivisions, all ag zone parcels subject to a conditional use permit, and then any development activity on a commercial, industrial, or those other subdivisions. However, that mechanism, and we put listed this in any ordinance amendment, and Andy Chappell agreed this is the way to go. It may be waived if, and this is, of course, up for debate, if it's a farmstead split, if it's a subdivision for no more than two lots where one lot contains a house constructed prior to October 1, 2015, or whatever date this is adopted. So essentially, that would look like, so here is a five-acre lot with a house on it, zone residential. They want to split that into one lot, two lots. That actually, the sensitive areas ordinance could be waived. And it's also important to point out, may. It's not shall, it's not will. It may be waived. So if this second lot is...
If that's on a 45-degree slope at the reservoir, I want the sensitive areas
Rick
ordinance.
Has the ability to require... compliance with the sensitive areas ordinance. And then also it can be waived for conditional use permits for home businesses or special events on ag zone land. So already home businesses, those are already supposed to be essentially transparent. You can't, you know, you're not supposed to know they're there. They're already in a home, existing structures. It's essentially, you know, you put out a sign and, you know,
what about our multiple special events? It says, or special event, but we came up with a new thing that was, isn't it called multiple special event permit? I mean.
Yes, it is, but it's really, it falls under like the term special event,
okay.
But you can apply it for 12.
So you could waive it there. So the organic farmer is having their farm field celebration with a band and whatnot, and I mean, we're not going to make them build a bio swell to do that, right? I mean,
no, not. And actually, per the sensitive areas right now, we should be enforcing it, but we're not, for or something like that. So it would be important to take that out because, you know,
but
if it's
if
like a
it
rock
was a multiple special event, they're going to do 12 events a year, and we believe that that's having an impact on water quality, we could say, no, we're not waiving it.
Yep, may. Right.
I mean,
may be waived.
Okay.
So, and then you can waive it for distributed wind generators. So private wind generators, those are already a permitted use in all districts. Yes.
You know, so for farmstead splits, I think this actually gives us another way to get at the ubiquitous outlot, because we can say, well, if you want to do, you've got a 200 acres, you want to cut out the 5 acres for the farm that's already there, the house that's already there. And, oh, by the way, we also want this 5 acre outlet, outlot. Well, if you want that outlot, we're not going to waive it. You got to, you know.
So when we came up with this distributed wind generators, solar wasn't affordable, and we didn't really believe, I mean, we didn't know that distributed solar could become. We need to go back and get that changed, probably, or talk about it.
Yep,
put that on your to-do
list. But I'm not sure we'd even, why do we want to exempt wind? I mean, it seems like that would be the kind of place where you would.
You would not have to apply with sensitive areas.
I wonder why it's even listed in there, though. I mean, because you would think you would want to take a good look at the sensitive areas if you're going to do a turbine.
It says may. I mean,
you right. May. But
the difference is if you. I'm not arguing, but. And let's imagine that the next step is we're going to make distributed wind generators apply to distributor solar farms, too. So a wind generator at the reservoir in migratory bird area, we probably wouldn't waive this. A wind generator, distributed wind generator on flat ground with no. Trees or swamps or woodlands or prairies, you may. I mean, I think I assume that Rick and whoever takes Rick's seat isn't going to waive very much without Kate and whoever's in Kate's seat signing off on it, you know?
Yeah, I just worry about having it there at all. I mean, I think when something gets listed in there, then people are going to expect it.
Well, I guess, I mean, I'm okay with it unless someone wants, but because I think one of our statements in doing distributed wind generators already, although no one's done it, but I think they will do it if we could figure out the economics of solar, is we wanted to incentivize and allow people to be visionary in sharing these larger generators and larger, in, you know, if we do this, solar farms. So we wouldn't want to put more burdens on them if it wasn't necessary. Now, I assume it wouldn't get waived very often if we had any concerns at all.
So maybe you want to make that alternative energy.
Well, we don't have, it's for the ordinance, the distributed wind generator is a specifically listed conditional use. So we couldn't know. Solar's
not. You're going to have to put that on the to-do list.
Solar is actually, we just have permitted that.
We just permit them.
But not a distributed, like my neighborhood association owns the whole thing.
Not like what at the Farmers Electric Co-op.
Right.
They needed.
So, I mean, I think we can't talk about it today, but that should get on a to-do list.
Correct.
Because I see that coming.
I can think about
100 feet or more is the size.
Yeah, I was thinking about wind generation. If there's trees in the way or things of that nature, they may want to plow some of those down. So,
right.
You know, I mean, yeah, so I could see that being a possibility of why, but if it's out in the middle of an open field, probably not.
Well,
not as much of a
concern. An optimum wind generator needs to be 50 foot above any surrounding obstacle within 500 feet. So if you have a 100-foot or 90-foot tree, then you need a 140-foot tower, you know. So, and they, you know, they put them up around with trees around them if they can sometimes. But they're normally, the best place is usually in the middle of an open field or on the top of a hill or something for best generation, so.
So I'm okay with it here, but I think your hearing, should you ever waive it, we would want to know why, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I don't, I want to have the ability to waive it in here, but I don't want to have it get used much.
I guess I was thinking that, you know, one, we're a small wind innovation zone, and two, any distributed wind generator, either A, they would have already done a sensitive areas ordinance study, because if it goes in for a new subdivision, that's done. And if they wanted to build it a year later or something, there wouldn't be any, you know, going back and forth like that. They would have that. Or it would be for an already built-up area, such as Westcott Heights, where they have basically an open field or a meadow that's being mowed, and they would just go in and they would build it there.
Yeah.
But I do, it came in, you know, with bird strikes, stuff like that, and it's sort of, you know, it's really difficult to always, you know, there's always a give and
wouldn't
take.
That,
and
in that situation, wouldn't that be a conditional use?
It is a conditionally permitted use.
So I would think you'd want to expect, you want it to meet the criteria.
Right, but as part of the application, would we require to come in with a sensitive area study? And possibly we could just require portions of it, I think. If it's you know, if May, we can say, hey, look, you know, you don't need to worry, you know, you're such a small footprint, you don't need to worry about archaeology or, you know, the wetland, but we want to know, we want a critical wildlife assessment.
See, right now, that's what we do with cell towers. But their lease area is usually 100 square feet. So we have them do a sensitive areas review on 100 square foot, or well, 10 by, or 100 by 100, excuse me, in the road getting to it. Just like June.
I'm okay with it here. I mean,
everybody
as a May.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's important that we have these waivers, but not use them a whole lot.
I guess the one I didn't understand is the one Rod brought up, is said this could apply to an outlot. Isn't an outlot generally used as a green space, or is this if they're going to develop something further on it that you'd want to meet the criteria?
Outlots, they're considered non-buildable in the fact that you can't build a dwelling unit on them. If on outlots, you can build an outbuilding or put some type of alternative energy generation source.
So that would impose or set off the sensitive areas, if that's what they were doing.
Yes, because for the wind, they would need to get a conditional use permit. So I guess I got two who want to keep it in here as maybe waived.
I'm less worried about the wind, frankly, down the road.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more worried about the farmstead split where I want a 10-acre outlot and a 5-acre outlot. And to me, that's just, well, go through sensitive areas if you want that, you know.
And maybe, you know, one of the, you know, so if it's a farmstead split, and we do consider farmstead splits, you know, the one buildable lot of no more than 5 acres and then the outlot. And I talked about it briefly with Andy Chappell. And maybe if we want to quantify this a little bit more, like one lot farmstead splits, but this is something that I need more direction from.
I would say one lot farmstead split.
So I own the parent farm, and all I'm trying to do is peel off the house because I'm going to sell that and I'm going to keep farming the rest. No dirt's going to be disturbed. Nothing's going to change. So it could be waived.
Correct.
So I'm the same owner, and I want to peel off the house. That's lot one. And then I'm going to give them the 20-acre estate they want, so I'm going to give them 15 more acres of bare ground that I had been farming as outlot one, A or whatever. So if you make it maybe waived at a farmstead split, you could waive that. If you make it maybe waived of a farmstead split of no more than one lot, you couldn't waive it. Adding in that outlot would trigger.
Right, and whatever we do, that if we put up front, this is a farmstead split of no more than one lot, then we don't have to worry about being arbitrary. Because sometimes we've had situations where, you know, it was almost necessary. If they wanted to do the farmstead split, they also needed to do the outlot because they, you know, they did the 5-acre limit, and then they wanted to take on like a prairie grass project, or they wanted to go to a stream bank or a property line. So some of those.
See, but sometimes the outlot is bare ground, and it makes me upset.
Yes.
And other times, it's the woodland, the prairie, and the pond and whatnot, and I'm like, good. Because you're removing that from the temptation of the farmer to start cutting down all those trees, which in my home area, I was shocked how they've done that now. They've taken away all those woodlands. So in that case, I want them to include the outlot in the house sale.
But by having to go through the sensitive areas ordinance, we'd get an inventory of that.
Right. Okay, but could it dissuade someone from taking the extra 4 or 5 acres to protect that woodland or prairie or whatnot? Because then it's going to trigger sensitive areas at a cost of X. Where I started out trying to do the right thing,
I think, now
I just say leave it with the farm. I don't care.
I think it would, but I think that where we have this is more. Well, we had this with. A classic example of this is what Krochek's have, where the whole thing is a farm, but there's not any of it farmed. It's all like big grove trees, right? And I mean, in a way, I think that they're going to do a lot to conserve it. But the example still holds in that they've got like a huge, like 15-acre outlot there. That scares the hell out of me, that I'd rather have them had gone through sensitive areas on it. I mean, I don't know.
I think the thing we're running into now is...
We could probably exempt it if they were going to say the whole thing goes to forest reserve.
Well, they're probably a bad example because I think they've already done that.
Well,
so.
It just struck me because it was a farm. It's right. Over 40 acres. There's not anything actually in ag use.
But where I was going is the Food Council. You know, this is a way to help them get on these acreages and maybe do a two-acre lot and a 5-acre outlot that they want to farm.
Yeah.
And you're going to make them do a sensitive areas review, stormwater management. I mean, I can see some potential conflict with them.
Well, and I can also see, I mean, so you start in that you don't want people to take outlots out of production. That's the premise I start from. And when I get most upset about it is when it's bare ground and it's in production. When the outlot is a prairie or a pasture or a woodland or a swamp or a pond or whatnot, I'm like, good for you for taking that temptation away from the farmer and, you know, to get rid of that natural habitat. So I don't actually want to put more... I want our administrator to have a little more flexibility here, although I don't actually want him to use it very much. Well, I mean,
we see a lot of farmers too that square up the property. Because in other words, you know, here's the property line, here would be this 5 acres, and here would be the house and 2 acres or 3 acres. The farmer doesn't want to come around here and do row crop. So, I mean, that was some of the reasoning, and also fence lines.
But in all the times we've been sitting here, I've seen, you know, what, 5 or 6 outlots that kind of made sense like that, and I've seen 50 that all they're trying to do is in 15 or 20 years, they're going to be in here arguing that they should be able to build a house.
So the problem with that I kept coming back to in trying to decide how we would put together this ordinance and what should be waived is that, especially for the farmstead splits and the outlot, we're trying to dissuade people from taking agricultural land out of production, which really is at sensitive areas. Per our ordinance, that's not considered sensitive areas, although I understand why it's important, by requiring them to preserve sensitive areas. So if someone wanted to do the outlot and they paid the money to submit the sensitive areas ordinance and all the requirements, chances are it's going to come back, no sensitive areas, and it's going to be taken out of production anyway.
If it's in production.
Well, I mean, maybe, I suppose it's just, it really needs to be dealt with separately, and maybe I'll just see if there's two other people at least that want to talk about outlots in general, because I think we're just setting up a future problem.
That was a different topic we had when we had our meeting, right. Was the size of outlots. I mean,
and frequency and why,
I'm fine with the way it's written because I want a little more flexibility to exempt it if they're doing the right thing already. I mean, if you're doing the right thing already by taking that woodland in an outlot, then I don't want to put roadblocks in front of you that would make you say, forget it, I'm not going to do it, it stays with the farm. And then the farmer just comes in and bulldozes all the trees down anyway.
Right.
I mean...
Yeah.
Farmer can do that right now.
Right. Yeah. Right. But a lot of times the property's more valuable if they have the pretty lot with it.
People from the city will not cut the trees down. That's why they moved there in the first place.
Yeah.
And the outlots, and again, I fall back on, historically, we've never found any sensitive areas in a tilled field. You know, they've destroyed anything. And, you know, the tills go down, they go down 18 inches or so. So I like the ability to make the decision. I just don't want you guys looking over my shoulder every time I do something to make sure I didn't do something you didn't want done. That's where I struggle, too.
Well, maybe we should just leave this like it is. And if there's three people who want to talk about outlots in another agenda, we can do that.
Yeah, I mean... This whole process is just that. I mean, for us to even to go where we're going now in this conversation was, I mean, to get to where we are now was a compromise before, which was we're making a pretty significant change, and now we had a chance to review it. Did it work? It seems to be working. Is there an opportunity to take it further? And we're progressively and incrementally doing that. That's what this is. I'll ask again when we get to the end game, which I did, I don't know what year it was, and that is, are you going to be able to do this? Do you have the right staff? Do you have enough staff to be able to handle these things without additional staff? And it seems like we continue to hear yes. Okay.
Well, we've done a lot of sensitive areas stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, how to define that. And Kate has created maps, and they're not totally perfect. Not like when you have somebody go out there and actually do an archaeological, do sensitive areas review, woodlands, trees, and things like that. But it's very, very good for me to look at to make a decision, which I'd be making quite a few times, or my predecessor, or whoever takes my place. That is a very good presentation and map, and it has aerial photos built into it. So we have the tools to do the preliminary. If there's a doubt or close to, then we say no. You got to do the whole thing.
Well, and that's kind of my point. I think if you're going to exempt someone and waive this, not exempt them, waive it. I bet there's going to be pretty good consensus of sustainability and soil and water and the administrator that says this makes sense to waive it here. They're not moving dirt, you know, they're not doing whatever. But, you know, if the board has directed you that we're concerned about sensitive areas, I doubt you waive that often, and when you do, it'll be a slam dunk.
Yeah, I mean, and in terms of, you know, staff, I mean, I think, you know, we've had this since late 2005, I think, maybe. Does that sound right?
Sound about right.
So in 10 years, we've had five or six, basically, I think they're loopholes. You know, where people have used what I consider a loophole, like on West Overlook
Road.
Yeah. And so I don't think, and in terms of extra work, I think it would just be that five or six different.
No, this is for basically every application that's beyond one.
Well, so...
That's a lot more.
This is... So I have this question. because I'm getting some mixed signals possibly. So maybe waived if. I guess when I sat down with Andy, we discussed, and
Andy Chappell,
county attorney, and we kind of talked about, you know, that this, you know, if you're a farmstead split, unless there's some kind of extraordinary circumstance, that it's, you know, that it's going to be waived. Is that what the board wants?
No.
Or so they want the administrator to 9 times out of 10 require sensitive areas and not waive it?
I can't tell you the percentage, but...
Or...
Depends on the terrain. So, it depends on the sensitive... Is there sensitive areas there?
Is there a pond? Is there a steep slope?
So, I think you got the wrong message from what I intended to send. And I intended to send that almost everybody's going to have to comply
with... this as a very impactful issue for staff. I mean, if you we're talking about making sure that pretty much every new application that comes to us that's beyond one is going to have this sensitive areas ordinance applied.
So when we met before, what I meant to send a message is almost everybody's going to have to comply with sensitive areas. And if they don't, it's going to be a slam dunk and staff is going to be able to say, this is why we don't think they need to apply. It doesn't apply here. No dirt's being moved. No buildings are being built. Nothing's changing.
Yeah, we really haven't had, I mean, of all the things we've had to do in my 11 and a half years here, we've had farmstead splits, and we've had major subdivisions, and the in-between is not that many. And there really haven't been that many three-lot subdivisions. It's just that when we have them, they don't have to do this. But it's not like there's been a lot of them. I mean,
well, we're going more than one now.
Right.
But the bigger ones have already had to do it.
And in the farmstead splits,
two or more, right?
If they're just pulling out a house and nothing else is changing, it probably doesn't trigger this.
Yeah.
But if they're pulling out a house and an out lot and they're going to build a new house, then clearly it's going to trigger it, you know? But if it's the existing 1920s house and all they're doing is pulling it off, then...
I mean, I imagine that if you took our last 25 farmstead splits that we've done and ran through them here, we could real quick, yes, no, and you'd have 5 or 6 that would be a debate, and then you just look harder at them, you know? I would think most of them are going to be pretty clear. I think if there's a question, if you think that anybody up here would...
Well, that's going to be the issue, is that it's a matter of trust into our department heads, which I have that. And so the question will be, do you want that or not? Because if you don't want it, then let us know right now. Because I will tell you right now, if I was a department head, and because of the system of government we have chosen, which is 5 county managers, I would feel uncomfortable having that discretion.
You're scaring me more now.
See, I don't... I guess my argument is... Kate and whoever is sitting in her chair, you know, I'm not assuming she'll be here forever. They've been sent to every single school to know stormwater management and sensitive areas and their expertise. Our own staff, sustainability, the definition of that is changing. I mean, they have masters in planning and they're being sent to all these schools about sustainability and LEED and everything else. If the staff says to the administrator, we believe sensitive areas or stormwater management should be waived in this case because of the following reasons. The staff has said that. If they say, whoa, we're really worried about X and we think this, then I don't expect you to waive it. Now, that doesn't mean you all have to agree, but I think you're all grown-ups and would have an argument, you know. And if I asked you, why did you waive it in this, I think you'd be able to tell me that, well, we waived it because of X. No land was being moved, no buildings were being built, you know.
And I would at least want a matrix
on those outlines
of that.
I mean, we have people that come in and they want to put a barn up for their horses. So, I mean, that's going to get disturbed somehow. But the guy that raises hops, he had a 30-acre, 20-acre outline, and he disturbed the soil. But he's producing. He's
right.
Farming it.
Yeah.
So, well, he's only disturbing the soil, like...
Not for a building permit.
No.
12 inches.
Farming. Yeah.
What if it... Oh, another thing that if it comes back, what if it's prairie grass or some kind of prairie remnant that we consider to be sensitive? Are we not going to let them put that in production if it's an outlot? Because that is...
They can put it in production now. But at least with sensitive areas ordinance, they'd have to go through and take an inventory and...
Replace it.
Mitigate somewhere, do something.
I think earlier in the comment, when this was brought up, is I'm comfortable because there's five different people up there that all have a different idea. Really. And there'll be, in 2 years, there may
be... So if you're uncomfortable, then let's just take out the ability to waive it at all and make everyone do it.
But I
believe there are some slam dunks that it'll be like, you know... This is clear that nothing's happening here, and waiving stormwater or sensitive areas makes sense. Well, I don't think there'll be that many slam dunks, but I do think there will be some.
But they're coming before you with
an outline. And if you gave me a year's worth, I could tell you which ones I thought probably should be waived.
Right, and
but well, that's for
I've
you, but I'm saying
is,
what about...
Yeah.
That's,
I'm sorry, Jim.
But if staff doesn't feel that they can get a sense of it from us, then we shouldn't
well,
waive any.
Unless you developed a criteria for the waiver,
like a point
that is something that we could agree with, that would make the most sense.
Yeah,
is that you develop a matrix, you develop a, you know, just basically a set understanding that we can all agree with you, and then that way you know it's checked off, it's waived.
Some of the examples I...
That's a good point. They scored 9 points, it gets waived.
Yeah.
That's reasonable for you guys, but I still think of the farmer that shores up his property. He's got a creek with wetlands, with floodplain in the middle, and he can't cross anywhere, and he can't get a permit to cross it. So he doesn't want that little piece anymore, and he gives that with the lot as an outlot, because we don't want him building on it, outlot on it. I would say yes, they have to. They've got to go through the whole thing. Although... More likely, the only thing here is, like you said, do an inventory. You know, it's going to be floodplain. So, you know, they can't build anyway. But on the buildable side, you want the house then not to have to get a... And they're the one disturbing...
You're asking a hypothetical.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So
I mean, if you're only peeling out the... When we had our last meeting...
I wasn't here.
We talked about if you only peel off the house and a farmstead split, nothing changed, nothing got moved... then maybe you could waive sensitive areas in stormwater management.
Yeah.
Because to make them retroactively manage the stormwater on a 70-year-old house is a problem, you know? But if it's bare ground and they're about to build a house, then you're not waiving it. I mean, you know, I would think we would be better off to have the ability to waive it, but if we think it's going to be a problem, then don't waive them at all.
Well, I think Terrence has come up with a decent idea. We'll get a point system, and I think you agreed with that.
Some sort of scoring.
Some
sort
of scoring.
Some
of the pressure off my back.
I mean, yeah. That seems like a lot of work.
The whole thing does.
I just think if you're unsure, don't waive it.
Yeah.
But
the board's going to have final action on it.
Yeah.
Whatever comes before.
Yes.
Well, that's true. I mean, the other option is to somehow in the process incorporate or at least know that residents beware that the board may still make that request.
So
something of that nature.
One of the things that should happen here, if this is the path we're going down, we need another sentence in this 835A because it says may waive. May waive in certain circumstances, may waive rarely. I mean, come up with some legal word that says this isn't going to happen very often. I mean...
So, when... I guess I was always under the impression that, you know, maybe waive that I have always assumed that a certain, you know, a larger percentage of the subdivisions would be waived. That we wanted to do this, amend the sensitive areas ordinance, to count for those West Overlook subdivisions where they're basically, they're just throwing it in our face.
That's not what I want to do, Josh.
And that's what I was thinking. But, I mean, we'll do whatever.
I don't think it matters if you're building four houses or one houses. I don't want you tearing down old growth trees and destroying woodlands and wetlands. It doesn't matter whether it's four or one. And that's been the issue with, and I get why the board did what they did with major subdivisions, but I just think our county has changed. And we
just did it because it was, RJ thought it was going to be the easiest way to do it. We didn't think about the ramifications, and we just created a loophole.
But when they come in for a one house and bulldoze all those old trees and tear out the prairie, that's as wrong as if they did it if there were four houses. So from my perspective, the waiving here will be rare, not the other way around.
So like this the scenario that you just described, I would say that would not be waived because it's not a farmstead split.
Sure.
Well,
they're farmsteading split.
Yes, yes.
One little plot with no house there.
Some timber.
Yeah. And if they're doing, but if they're farmstead splitting the old 1970s or 60s farmhouse and the outbuilding, then nothing's changing. Then
again, no dirt's being moved. I think that's a simple criteria, is no dirt's being moved.
I mean, I don't care. We can just make everybody go through it, but I do think we can eliminate this for some people rarely.
You're going to have everybody want to not do it. We know that. They don't want to spend the money. They don't want to spend the time.
That's going to be a concern. Is it, how are we going to balance that? Is woodland more valuable than row crop? I think it's a difficult situation, or kind of a possible predicament.
Yes.
When it comes to this waiving, and how do you ensure you treat everybody fairly?
Well, if we don't think we can figure a path, then just make it apply to everybody.
Yeah.
And you know, the matrix, that might be a possible way to go through it, or, you know, if we wanted to apply to everybody. But I do have some concerns about, you know, if we have 15 sensitive area submissions 1 month, it's going to be, that would be impactful of staff, I think. Because it is some work trying to go through it all, reading, putting it all together, the review process. It's not, and rightly so, when we, a sensitive area submission, it's not a simple process, because it's very, our sensitive areas is extremely thorough.
I mean,
stormwater, very, very.
I feel like we can lay out what we want and that staff can comply with it. But if the board doesn't trust ourselves, or if the board doesn't trust staff, or if staff doesn't trust themselves, or staff doesn't trust the board, or any combination there, then just make everybody do it. I would like to have the person who says, gee whiz, this 500-acre farm and this 5 acres with the house and buildings, nothing's changed for 100 years. Why should we do it? I get that argument. And I wanted to be able to allow them to opt out. But if we just don't think we can do it, then I'd rather just have everybody.
No, I will look at it as, do you have the staff to do every single one?
I would say that would be pushing it if we had to do every farmstead split and subdivision, conditional use permit, everything. That would be difficult.
Then I think we ought to come up with a system of waiver.
I can go and do some research on the matrix. Is that what? Does anybody feel that's a decent idea?
I have concerns about a matrix, and the reason being is that, you know, I might have whatever the criteria might be, you need six. All right, I've got five. Okay, this old tree has to come out. Not necessarily the 80-year-old bur oak, but maybe the junk tree. Are we going to stop it because that one tree is in the way? I just have issues about that.
Well,
from my perspective, the number one priority here is protecting sensitive areas and better managing stormwater. That's my number one goal. Everything else was just to make it easier in some cases. But if that's not going to make it easier, then just take out the waiver.
And if
that means we have to raise our permits, then that's what we're going to have to do. Because I think the people of this county want us to protect natural areas and better manage our stormwater.
You know, and in terms of, you know, does staff have the time? I mean, it may be that, you know, right now you apply in March and you expect that you're going to have your thing by June 1st. Maybe it's July 1st now. You know, I mean, maybe the application process goes a little bit longer. But that'd be a trade-off, you know.
I mean, it reminds me a lot of the conversation we had whatever year that was, because this was a lot of it, which was, if we're going to go down and make this change, how can staff handle it? And to me, I still like the waiver process, and quite frankly, I would like to be able to have trust and confidence in the experts in that department to be able to handle that. So that's where I am.
Yeah, I want to stay with two or more. I'm on basically the same page as Terrence.
So if it's two lots or more?
Yes. Well, that's what we're talking about, right?
No.
So
more than one.
So
more than one is two.
So basically, unless you're the way this is put together, and we might be able to make some additions. So unless you're a farmstead split, and we could add of no more than one lot.
Well, I don't think people wanted to go there.
And that would take care of the outlot issue.
Right.
Or if you're a subdivision of no more than two lots. So if you have an existing residential lot, which is the only
way just had one of these.
Right. So, for example, yes.
Mattingly.
Yes. So if you're an existing residential lot and you have a house on it that was there prior to the adoption of this new amendment, then it may be waived. So, and the thinking on that was, so essentially just imagine this is a large 5-acre lot that's all grass right now. It's just all yard. Someone is zoned residential and they want to put in a shared system, split it in half. We would waive that.
This could be, we just had the Boyd application as a perfect example of this. They're just drawing the lines around differently. I would not require them to get
They're not disturbing ground.
They're not doing anything except changing the lines.
We're not going to make them put in a bioswell or a detention pond or. I wanted this waiver to kind of grandfather in things that aren't changing. Stuff like this conditional use or special events or, And I believe staff, can handle this. I think that if I use the real names and not your job titles, but we've got Kate and we've got Josh and we've got Rick. And we're probably going to start bringing Becky into some more of this stuff. If they all say, look, I think we should waive this because of X, Y, and Z, then cool with me. But if you say, whoa, did you consider whatever? And you guys, I think you're going to figure out what you can waive. Now, does that mean that we may need more staff in the future? It's possible. But I do think that's what the people of this county want from us.
To
protect sensitive areas.
Yeah. If you start down this path and you're finding that you come to the board and each time you've got a couple people going, wow, I don't know if I would have done that. I think you just adjust. I mean, I'm never going to say, I'm never going to take it out on staff for exercising that judgment. But if you come two or three times in a row and you've got three or four of us going, boy, I don't know if I would have exempted that one, I would assume you'll adjust. I mean, that's how it works, right? If our expectations are different than yours, I mean, it's not that anybody would be in any kind of trouble or whatever. It's just meeting expectations. I understand why that can be scary, but I think it. I don't see why it can't work.
Oh.
What I was thinking about doing is, we got a bunch of applications in, and we're getting them today. I was going to maybe do a sample. In other words, have Josh and I, Kate and Becky, sit down and look at these applications. Not, we don't have an ordinance, so, but at least inform you what our thought, or at least eventually
that
my thought.
That would be a good test.
That would be a great test.
Because if there are some simple ones in there that you think you could waive, you could show us.
Yeah.
So...
both in sensitive areas and stormwater management. I mean, I have a hard time separating these things out.
I
mean,
they are so
they're basically the same.
Kate does both.
Right.
But, so maybe a month from today, key issues meeting, share it with you, look at them if there is any outlots, and then just discuss them. Or maybe three weeks.
I think you could even go back through the last 25 applications.
Oh, we got new ones too. So I'm
yeah, but I mean,
whatever
yeah,
you want.
Yeah, but possibly we could even have, you know, sort of get your input also, like how we do the quizzes with.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what I was thinking.
Like we could see, or like with
would
the
you have waived this one?
Right.
We could do that. We could do the push button thing.
And I think what you're going to find is that we're going to agree more than not, and you're going to know the ones where, well, this could be a problem. Let's just make them go through it.
Yeah.
But your authority to waive has been tested how many times legally, and your authority is there.
But I do think if we're going to have the direction that we're waiving less frequently, this sentence needs to change a little bit so that it's not interpreted you're absolutely going to do it. I mean,
it'd be terrible if all these applications, I would waive them all.
Yeah.
I mean, but still, you're going to get the
information. I think that's a very good test. You guys sit down, make what you think would be your recommendation, then you show them to us and we push the button.
Okay.
And then we find out how we would have done it. I mean, that's a pretty good test.
Okay. I can work that out with Susie. She's working on stuff for Tuesday for me.
Auxiliary dwelling unit, can you explain that one to me? We never got to it.
That is
granny home.
So if all you have is a granny home...
in the ag district.
Then it could be waived. Okay.
Can be waived, yes.
See, the maximum size of a granny home, apartment, whatever, is 1,000 square feet.
Right.
So it's not much bigger than...
than the sheds
we're
talking about.
The shed that we just had.
Yeah. So it's also, you know... we've talked about before wanting to support small house movement. A small house on a larger house property could be waived.
No.
No.
This is the auxiliary dwelling unit is specifically for a family member living. You can't create another dwelling unit and rent it out to your buddy or a college student or...
but your son or daughter.
Oh, yeah.
Your son or daughter or... to
parents. Usually we're getting it for parents, elderly parents that need care.
Your disabled adult child.
Or parents moving into giving their house to the
That's happening.
Family, so.
All right.
But there's no restrictions on me finishing a basement for an elderly person, your parent, to live in, right? In your own house, existing house?
Grandma can live in your basement.
Without a problem.
It's when... when you're creating another dwelling unit and it has your own entryway and your own kitchen,
apartment.
Your own, essentially you're building an apartment into your basement.
That's where the line's drawn.
Electrical unit.
Right. It's usually when it has, it's sort of take a hard look when it's like, okay, you have your own access now, then it's, and you're sealed off from the rest of the house.
If you still have your stairway going upstairs, accessible enough.
Yeah, if you want to build a bedroom and, you know, a TV room.
Yeah, we have people build a room on. That's just building a room on.
Yeah,
they can do that all they want.
Right. So.
Does like having a stove down there make a difference?
You can have two kitchens in your house right now.
I do.
So. It's one of those.
One, two in your trailer, so I don't think you really are a good example.
I got four.
So one of those judgment calls. So all right. So stormwater, we would change this. So right now it says no plat of a major subdivision plat, conditional use permit, or site plan shall be approved. Oh, so actually, so it says right now no plat of a major subdivision. So we're adding subdivision plat, conditional use permit, or site plan. So essentially it was the four lots or more of the major subdivision when stormwater kicked in. Now, like with sensitive areas, it will apply to all subdivisions, all conditional use permits, and all site plans unless it is waived. And again, it's the farmstead split application. Subdivisions of the two lots or more, unless it contains an existing house, and then conditional use permits.
So the way that's worded, then the single house is going to have to meet the criteria.
That is correct. So if you had just a bare ground and you wanted to do a subdivision and it was not a farmstead split, then you would have to comply with stormwater management regulations. Which, so it's bioswells, other.
And hey, if I'm if I'm farming around one of those Dave Hahn houses, I want him to have a stormwater management plan, because what happens on his house is going to affect my farm all the way around.
So that's so basically, unless it's that the farmstead split or an existing house. So generally, if you're not a farmstead split and you're making a change, adding, building another lot or another buildable unit, that's when it's going to kick in.
But the example that I used, 1960s farmhouse, is being farmstead split out, so that the farmer is going to retain the farm and the house could be sold. Nothing's changing. It could get exempt from stormwater management.
It could, yeah.
Bare ground, build a new house, that's not going to happen.
Yes, and then you don't have to waive that.
Yeah, I'm talking about you've got a farm field, and what he likes to do is drive a really long driveway,
right,
and split the lot off, and that's the lot, and it's a 500-foot driveway, and somebody else owns all this, and he just owns this. That person, with their 3,000-square-foot house, should have a stormwater management plan, because it's going to run somewhere.
And just because, you got to comply with sensitive areas does not mean that you automatically have to comply with stormwater, or vice versa. If you don't have to comply with sensitive, if that's waived, doesn't mean we're going to waive stormwater.
There could be nothing sensitive there we're worried about, but we still are worried about the runoff of their lawn chemicals into the organic farm next to them.
Yes. And then for these other conditionally permitted uses, again, the only differences are a bed and breakfast home, which is essentially, it's a home business. So I suppose that we would not waive it if we saw that for this bed and breakfast home, they're putting a 10,000-square-foot, paved parking lot. Then we might be like, well, I think we might need to take a look. But if it's essentially, hey, I have this quaint little house on the res and I want some people to come and they can park in my existing driveway and stay here, then probably not have to comply with stormwater. So, because there are no material changes to the property.
Makes sense.
Okay. So, and I guess some of the questions that I came up with, staffing, of course, we've already been through that. Do we want to sort of tighten the trigger a little bit, such as defining development activity? So one of the things, the problems that we have ran into in the past, people own a 40-acre parcel of ground, and it's, let's say it's already zoned residential. They don't want to comply with sensitive areas, or they know that there's something there, and no one else knows. We've seen it before, such as some developments, out on Curtis Bridge Road, maybe, where they've gone through and they've done all the earthwork, graded everything, moved stuff around, and then they're like, okay, now I want to apply for a subdivision. And we're like, whoa, what happened here? It's like, oh, I just was playing around in the dirt one day, and that's what happened.
Can we prevent that?
Right now?
But could we change our ordinance in such a way?
This is what the defining the development activity. Yeah. That would work harder to prevent that. Because it would say, you know, no development activity on, you know, residentially zoned ground, and we would define that as any earth moving, you know,
I gotta say right now,
putting in ponds and that stuff.
You have gone down a slope that I want to have a whole lot of conversation with a lot of residents that live out in the country before we go down that road.
Especially when we got 16,000 acres that are zoned.
I don't know how you can actually do that. I mean, while I see the problem there, someone have to figure out how to do it.
Because regulate it.
Because
any of those things, yeah.
Farmers tear out tree lines, and I don't agree with, but they have the legal right to do it.
Well, Johnson County, Iowa, tore out tree lines to allow Joe Slotek to farm more ground.
Right.
You put a pond in, and you can easily say it's for your cattle.
Good.
But then a year later, you decide, I'm going to put some houses here.
I'm not willing to explore this area, Josh, but you'd have to find us an example of someone who's done it.
Yeah.
One.
No, I can think of another. I can think of another example like that too. I thought of the one you were thinking of, but I just think it's really hard to catch.
The only angle you have, probably, and again, we're getting into constitutional things here. Probably something to do with impact on certain protected waterways that we would have had.
Well, they can't do it in a floodplain because they'd have to have a floodplain
like
permit.
Richard,
not to the extent of this.
Well, they'd have to have a net lease permit too.
Portwood,
an acre.
If it's a
Portwood,
yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Because I've asked the question like at DNR, farmer upstream, it was a tile district, retiled everything. 10-inch rain comes downstream to DNR's property itself as a tidal wave, and just blew out DNR's banks, took out 3 bridges. And I'm like, why are they not legally responsible? I mean, tell me why they're not legally responsible. Iowa law doesn't allow that. I mean, the upstream people can do whatever they want, basically. And that, I think, is a much bigger can of worms than we can address here. Although I'm willing to have the conversation, but I just don't know how we do it.
And it is just one of the sort of, we're on the topic, one of the things that I wanted to explore a little bit more to decide, you know, if it's a issue that we've come across before, is this something that we can fix since we're amending the ordinance? Can we look into a way to tighten it up a little bit? So, but if...
I mean, you're not required to rezone, and you're not required to, do building permits. I mean, you have to have, they have to meet, you know, whatever requirements. I just don't know how you would ever prove that a person's, because what you're getting into is their intent.
Well, in a certain time frame,
really hard.
Too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or if a piece of property changes hands, I mean, there's a lot of different... I mean, if someone's father or mother went and tore it all out, and now they're given, to get around it, they're giving it the land. You know, do you see what I'm saying?
Right. No, I don't.
They didn't do it. Someone else did it.
And then the second question, do we want the sensitive areas ordinance and stormwater management ordinance to apply to ground that is publicly zoned? So any ground that is... owned by a public entity such as ourselves, Iowa City, the school district?
Yes.
Okay.
But just because you're the government doesn't mean you should tear out woodlands and prairies. And
why wouldn't we? What's the argument?
Because generally with the publicly zoned ground, we want to sort of, and this is a discussion I had with Andy Chapel yesterday, was that we want to, you know, reduce regulations, assuming that, you know, the government entity is going to do the right thing and set the example, such as, I know, like...
That's with, just simply not true. Sure.
And this is why I wanted to...
Like with conservation, you know,
that we,
I would kind of automatically say, well, conservation will have a plan for this and we'll accept whatever plan they put forward. But just because Iowa Mennonite School wants to expand or something, I don't know why we wouldn't want them.
I don't think the government should pass rules that don't apply to themselves. I mean, Congress does that all the time. I don't want to be in that. If it's good for the homeowner or the business, it should be good for us. I mean, why would we? I mean, the assumption that government will do the right thing is wrong. I mean, they invariably never do the right thing. So, I mean, I trust the government less than I trust a lot of developers. I mean, now, are we legally able to make them do it?
Only if we put it in there. So right now, in the public...
Well, because I've heard the federal government say to the city, we don't care about your setbacks, we'll do whatever we want.
Right.
I mean, they just did that with Veterans Affairs in the parking lot.
I'm not sure about that.
I think that that is kind of what... I think they do have the ability to do that. But so how would the... Just an example, how would this apply at the Hawkeye Wildlife area?
That is the, so essentially right now
zoned public
the any use is permitted unless it's specifically defined as a conditional use, which is like a landfill or a composting facility.
So they want to put in change the whole shooting range and put in a new building.
Yes,
that would
they could do that.
But if we don't exempt them, they would have to comply with sensitive areas and stormwater management, right?
That is correct.
I want to make them comply with that. The lead shot there is very dangerous.
When it comes to the state, I'm not sure. I would have to...
I don't know if we could make them comply, but we,
I don't think we
but we wouldn't... But would we exempt them automatically is the
but
question.
But I know, like, Iowa City, the school district, then, you know, we would make them...
I mean, they're not going
to... They would have to... Right. I mean, like the landfill.
I don't want to make regulations on people that doesn't apply to the government. That's my play on it. Whether we can enforce it is a whole different matter, which we've given you two examples where we're not clear, but...
I've made the DNR get building permits, and I've blocked them.
And they should get floodplain management permits, too.
Oh, they do. Actually, you're aware of the ones I've did, the wetlands right. And so on.
I mean, I'd like to have it apply.
Okay. So to... And these are questions. I just want to make sure that everybody, that we're all, so I'm seeing three heads and sounds good.
Well, again, we're just giving some general direction here. Okay. I mean, so we'll officially have a vote, and it sounds like those scenarios are being fleshed out. When we go through this whole process, does this go to PNZ Commission, or is this just going to go right? What did Andy Chappell
think about that? Go to PNZ. So right now, I don't think that it applies to public zone districts, the sensitive areas, or the stormwater.
So that may be something to
do. So they, it was
something,
carved
that's
down
why
originally.
I brought it up. It's something that we probably need to make sure that...
We ran into a little bit of this with the high school and some of our building permitting requirements, things of that nature, and we...
And fees.
And fees, yeah. That's where it really comes into play.
Of course, that's not even a public high school. I'm not sure how that works, but...
Private, right?
Yeah, but we've had...
We zoned it public, didn't we? Yeah.
I don't think we did, because it's not a public building.
I don't think it's zoned public. I think it's zoned residential with a conditional use permit.
I don't think a church high school can be zoned public, right?
Yeah.
I think it's conditionally permitted.
I mean,
newer.
Anything in the county... is going to be a higher level of government, one would think. So, you, Iowa City's not going to build anything in the county. That doesn't make much sense. They would annex whatever they
would. They do with the landfill.
The landfill.
And the sewage treatment plant.
And the sewage
treatment
plant. Yeah,
but the landfill's in
no,
the
that's
city.
The county.
I thought that they had a string that connected it.
Nope, that's all county. They
and the South Sewer Treatment Plant, well, our only sewer treatment plant now is in the county.
Yes.
When the city acquired that piece of property, not Hebel, not, what's their names?
They had to come to us and ask us to rezone it to public, remember?
Yeah.
They never annexed it. So.
But
I think we look really bad if we exempt government.
So we need to add that in then.
I mean,
right,
that's
now,
my play on it. I mean, we could.
I'd add it.
Okay.
Well, I would want to know what Andy Chappell, some of the pitfalls of that. But I don't, I mean, on the premise of things, it does make sense that we would practice what we preach. So, yeah.
Sounds great. So the next one, this one hopefully should be a bit easier. There was some direction that the name rural cluster, specifically the word cluster.
Just a second. Did anyone want a short break before we go forward?
Yes.
We'll take about it.
Are we?
We're waiting on the.
We are back in session. Is there anything further that anyone has on the development ordinance or sensitive areas in stormwater management?
So just to recap, just make sure that I am clear, we are going to continue to make some revisions, and then we're going to schedule another work session and sort of gauge the board's, how everybody feels on like the last 25 applications that we received, whether they would fall, whether it be waived or not waived. And then we'll take that information and then we can actually do the amendment and run it through planning and zoning and then the board the following month.
I think that's a good way to proceed.
Okay. Plan on doing that. And the next item is rural cluster zoning district, name change for rural conservation zoning district.
Okay. So I have, according to that same work session that we talked about, the name or the term cluster, nobody likes it. So instead of calling it the rural cluster, the RC rural cluster zoning district, we can throw out the term cluster and make it conservation to be the RC rural conservation subdivision district.
Not only does no one like it, but it's not used anyone but here. I mean, across the country, these are called conservation subdivisions.
Right. And I think it was sort of based on, you know, we have a, for the actual clusters of the homes per our subdivision code. So I think we sort of adopted the term rural cluster, but rural conservation is another great term. And this is fairly simple to do. We ran the ordinance through Andy. He was okay with it. He only gave me about, you know, a half a page of corrections to make, which is pretty good.
That's a good day.
But, you know, we just need to make the change, and the changes essentially are sort of just changing the word cluster to conservation in the areas that need to happen. And also as part of this amendment, because of the county's commitment to local foods, on the open spaces, we want to add, and I got to pull it up. But so on the open spaces in the rural cluster, might be the rural conservation or zoning district. You know, we allow wind generators, recreation areas, you know, other types of agricultural uses, or just leave it for natural habitat. So some of the allowable uses for that open space. We also would like to add non-animal agricultural food production, including but not limited to traditional row crop planting. So if they wanted to row crop the open space, so for instance, the Dooleys, if they wanted to, the open space that they're preserving on their parcel, if they wanted to continue to row crop that, in that they could do that if it was zoned RC. Individual and communal fruit and vegetable garden plots. So for example, what the you know, we saw it in Dane County and some other like gardens that are set up just for the subdivision residents, or the production of local foods for resale to the public.
Would not that have been allowed before? It just wasn't specifically stated? Because isn't there a line or other?
That was my take.
It makes it very clear.
It was silent on it.
Right, but this makes it very clear.
No, I'm fine with adding it, but it would have been allowed before, right?
I think it would have been allowed before. It wasn't super clear, and this is like, since we're making these changes,
yeah, I definitely think we should add it, because that's what I always thought it could be. Mm-hmm. And I remember the conversation when we adopted this talking about that.
Well, this is really not, this is what Kate Edwards does already, for example.
I'm fine with the name change so that it's consistent with practice around the U.S. and all that. And as long as people understand we're not trying to get around what we intended to do. But I think that what I remember, at least as far as on my list of things I want to have reviewed, really will be, particularly as we look at the land use plan, I would like to rethink my support of rural cluster, rural conservation when it comes to areas that are probably further than 2 miles outside a city limit or from a growth area that we've identified, or some kind of definition I think that we'll want to have some conversation about in the future. That's likely probably a land use, a land management planning discussion. But I'm just starting to think about the potential of the kind of growth and development that is going to occur even within our growth area that is further away from, are we allowing too much in some of those areas? So I don't know if that needs to happen before the land use plan, but because it could fall as a different kind of districting or a mapping of just growth in general in the growth area. So it's a conversation I want to have at some point.
Yeah, I think it's
called conservation or cluster.
Personally, I think the conservation term is somewhat misleading, because to me that would mean you're not going to develop.
Well, it looks like we're trying to not use that word,
to me it's... we are allowing, there has to be some other type of a designation that it is growth, but it's, you're building on it. It's not making it, it's not conservation, it's not conserving that property or that. I know we are in part of it, but we are still allowing development on it.
But that's the whole point of cluster subdivisions or conservation subdivisions, is that you are preserving 50% of the land for conservation. I mean, and that's why across the country these are so popular, because it keeps green space. It does not allow every square inch of the land to be developed to private residences or private use, period.
Yeah, it's a matter of, I was just
maybe
saying.
Maybe it's just semantics. You know, maybe if it's,
it is,
maybe
but
if it's
also
a conservation
image.
Subdivision, yeah. Might be different.
Right, but do you know what I'm saying? I mean, we want to be consistent with what others do, but I think the message is that by changing this, it still is a cluster of homes that is creating a conservation area.
And I just made up rural conservation. If we want to...
Well, whatever the term, what's the real term that people are using? I guess that's what I want to
know. It's conservation subdivisions in smart communities. I mean, if you just Google smart communities, conservation subdivisions... You will find that this type of subdivision is growing in popularity because it's preserving green space for a variety of uses.
It's not just in counties either, it's in cities. Uh-huh.
So maybe the name ought to match whatever that is.
Were you just trying to keep the RC? Was that part of it? Just
that
the same initials?
But
it's all right. It's all right.
To me, rural conservation subdivision.
Then you wouldn't have. Yeah, it's RC. Just as the RC stands for something different.
I'm fine with that.
It's fine.
I'm fine.
It's not
with
rural
it.
Conservation subdivision, Pat. Right now, it's just rural conservation.
I know, but I think you have to have that subdivision in there.
Well,
that's what you're doing.
It's a zoning district.
It's a zoning district.
But
this is the term that people are using in smart growth and smart communities in conservation, because 50% of land is preserved. I mean, that's the purpose. And I'm fine with clarifying the local foods, but that was always allowed, in my opinion.
Yeah. Just makes it more clear.
You mean a driving range couldn't go on there?
Recreation. It says recreation. That would be allowed.
Well, we do. We are going to get.
You
can
have your 3-hole golf course.
Putt golf.
Well, I'm hoping is that again in the land use planning process we would look at what that additional land that's going to be made available that can't be grown on in these rural conservation zoning districts and allow for some additional flexibility so residents can.
But that would be covered by the sensitive areas.
They could already put a golf hole there if they want. They just can't charge the public to use it.
Well, yeah. See, what the first true conservation subdivision or cluster subdivision that we've had is right next to Lakeview Drive Golf Course. And part of that, when we first started working with Mark, he wanted to build a driving range. But the intent was, the way the language would have been, was that it's for the people in the development only can use it. And then it started expanding that,
right,
I want to hit some balls before I play golf. So then it was going to be a public. And then RJ and I started struggling with that, and then Mark just decided not to do it. But, I mean, that was one thing that popped up. When
but we have I mean, because we've done this. This is exactly what I want to say Windsor. Westcott Heights. This is exactly what Westcott Heights is, where there's a jointly owned meadows and there's jointly owned woods. You just have a smaller lot yourself. That's all it does.
So,
consensus
on the name?
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
As long as that's consistent and people understand that's what it is.
So the RC, Rural Conservation Zoning District, is...
That would be, I mean, whenever you have to, do you have to go back then and change everything from the past, or is it just...
No.
From the future on?
Moving
forward. It'll just be just known as this...
He's got all the code references in there. And
yeah.
I just sent a link to this, Smart Communities Network, but if you just Google it, you'll find about a million references. And cluster just was kept because of the other definition, and I just think that was a mistake. I mean, makes sense.
Okay. So we will... So I have direction. We can probably go ahead and put that on a upcoming planning and zoning agenda to come before the board in the sooner than later. Okay. Oops. That's all I have for.
Okay, then we're up to the possible renaming planning and zoning department.
Okay, so names. So, Rick, when did we change our name to planning and zoning?
Probably 20. How long has RJ been about?
RJ's been here 20 years.
So it happened right after he started.
So approximately 1995. Up until then, we were just the Johnson County Zoning Department. So when RJ started, the board decided to change the name. So to our current name, which is the Johnson County Planning and Zoning Department. So since that 1995-1996 date when we changed the name, we have taken on building inspections in 2001. We have been involved in sustainability since, and I think county has always been interested and involved in sustainability, but it was really recognized strategically and in adoption of some plans since the late 2000s, 08-09. We hired a soil and water conservationist in 2012, and we are looking to hire a local food specialist later this summer. So... I guess, do we need a new name? This is something that has come up and was on the agenda.
We can do this for now, and in the next strategic planning, I'm sure we'll assign some more things to the department.
Et cetera.
Are any of the names required by Iowa code?
It's
a zoning administrator required by Iowa code, that title?
I think that's referenced throughout the code.
Yeah.
Zoning administrator.
Yeah.
But I don't know if changing the title of the office has any...
Right. Well, so what I'm going to get at is I think we should change the name of the office because it clearly doesn't reflect what we're doing. But that also means we're probably changing a couple of job titles. And if we're legally required to keep certain things, I'd like to know that.
Okay. We can research that.
We can find that out.
I know that, like, so, you know... Linn County's planning and development.
Yeah, well, we've got a list.
Yeah, Dane County was another one I knew was planning and development. Polk County, it falls under public works. Mm-hmm. So it's not its own department. It's a division of public works.
Planning and development services under.
Yeah.
And then there's Boulder, community planning and sustainability, Portland, planning and sustainability, and then Boulder County, they're just called land use. And then everything else was sort of like a division under that. So those are some of the example names of looking around in the area and some other the more notable communities.
We can always note that the department head is the zoning administrator.
I think you have to keep something by law and not just they need just to know what that is.
Be in the job description.
Well, I think you just have to designate somebody. I don't think you have to. It doesn't have to be in their title.
So I'll tell you that I like planning and sustainability more than the others, because sustainability is not just water or air or soil or green energy. It can also be economic sustainability. I mean, and, you know, in the past, you've been asked, while it hasn't been on the top of our radar recently, about rural economic development, you know, and what is that, and what are our definitions, and how are we blocking it, or how are we allowing it? And
these are just suggestions that I ask around staff, Becky and Mitch and Rick, and like, what are some possible names.
Which one did you? I like probably the second one.
Planning, development, and sustainability department.
I think sustainability needs to be in there, and I think development needs to be in there.
Yes, I agree.
All right. I'm fine. I'm going to rule out growth management department because that sounds like finance.
Mm-hmm. I like that one.
One of the things you have to think about is you're getting this long. And so it's going to be not used because it's too long.
PDS would be.
I mean, we already say P&Z. We don't even say planning and zoning. So you got to think about if you're making an acronym or whatever.
Well,
what is it?
Yeah, you got to be careful what PDS.
PDS
PSD.
Doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, PDS. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that Becky recognized was, like, we want to stay away from PSD, planning, sustainability, and development, because if you have a T, then you got bunch of stressed out planners and
That's true, but
I think I like the second one.
I like number two a lot.
Yeah. That's the one that rings off the most out of those.
PDS.
Run it through the urban dictionary and stuff and see if PDS means anything.
Right next to Tor Santorum.
And then you're gonna have to look at your job descriptions will change, then are there certain words we still have to keep in your job descriptions?
So, and that's some of the, with the any name change. And I'm not even sure, like, what the process would be, but I'm sure we'll find out. I'll ask Andy Johnson. He knows everything about this.
What? To change it?
Yes.
We just put it up on the wall. We didn't do anything else.
We need to spend $11,000 on a sign.
You know, before we do this, too, have you talked to the commission, just to see if they had any thoughts or like anybody else? I mean, I'm just curious to know if other people have ideas.
Something that we could put on the agenda, I think, would be more than appropriate.
And
other business.
You know, Board of Appeals, I mean, just to see.
Well, they'll fight with each other about it.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But sure it shouldn't change the zoning commission name. It'd still have to be in existence.
They would be the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Yeah.
So.
But they could be the Planning and Zoning Development Commission.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, with that, we need to find out if the board wants to do it and know exactly what name you want. You know, we'll have to probably change some titles.
Foods, though, falls under sustainability.
Sure does.
Right? I mean, people understand it that way. Yeah.
All right, here's the urban slang. Most commonly used by internet trolls to define something as fake, edited, or not true, most of the time a joke. Jenny, I just got $100 from my mom. Jerk face, PSD. Oh, PSD, but that's not what we're using.
PDS.
Yeah, oh, sorry.
I sent you a link. It's nothing very common. So, Princeton Day School Public Distribution System.
Sounds pretty safe.
Sounds pretty safe.
At least for
Please
today.
Please don't shout.
Taco Bell will... Just check Taco Bell. They're the ones utilizing the new slang. I don't know if you've all read that. That's how they've had so much success with millennials.
Oh, post-dance syndrome.
Post-dance syndrome?
Mm-hmm. I think you're good.
Okay.
See what comes up on that after your discussions with them.
I think we need to do this. I mean, I actually, while I'm happy to have other people's opinion, a name change is in order. The other option is the department that does anything the board wants and we have nowhere else to put.
Maybe we just come up with a symbol.
So maybe a timeline you have some discussion with whomever.
Well,
and then back to us.
What do you think? We'll put it on an upcoming
agenda? Well, we're going to be on for the outlots to go through that. The same time frame to do that, or is this?
Oh, yeah, why not?
Just that way I won't have to remember too many dates.
Yeah, just run it, and you could still run it through P&Z that way, too, for a commentary.
Comments.
Okay. All right, next item is a response to Iowa Utilities Board order soliciting additional comments regarding distributed generation, DG.
Let's see, I had this letter somewhere. Oh, my. So, Angie,
I just passed out
okay.
copies.
So, if you want me, I can talk now, or you guys are all reading?
No, go ahead.
Okay, so, as you know, we are involved in a PPA, Power Purchase Agreement, for solar out of secondary roads, and as such, we had to downsize our original project from 140 kW to approximately 86 kW, because MidAmerican would not would essentially not allow us to net meter any extra electricity that is not used at the facility would go back on the grid, and we would just receive an avoided cost, which is a much smaller amount than any net billing rate.
Can I ask a question right there? Is it that state regulations does not allow that to occur, or is it because the utility does not allow it to occur?
Well, the utility says that the state does not allow, or according to what
their interpretation
of the of what the Iowa Utility Board has adopted, that since we're not the owner of the solar array, so therefore we are not eligible for any net metering or net billing purchases of the electricity produced.
But to me, I understand we're not the owner, then couldn't they pay back the person we're contracting with?
They're not using any energy. Because you don't have, what's it called, Mike? A virtual metering or?
It's not coming back. I understand that.
What's that called where you, virtual metering or?
Virtual net metering?
Like aggregate metering aggregate metering.
Because the one thing I have to say about this is net metering should be a minimum. But the Iowa Utilities Board should be moving towards virtual net metering or aggregate metering or whatever the technical term is now. Yeah. Because if we, for example, we wanted to develop a big solar farm at the poor farm and then offset our bills downtown, we could never get there even with net metering.
Yeah.
Because they're only going to allow you to do it on that one
meter.
Yeah. And we could add a sentence like... any net metering or should always be aggregate and virtual or
in addition the Johnson County Board of Supervisors supports aggregate metering or aggregate net metering or whatever the technical term is, because net metering in our case is good. It means that we can generate power at secondary roads for everything that's on that one meter. But without aggregate net metering or whatever the new technical term is, we can't generate it for any other building. And that's going to come into play when we're talking about here or the poor farm. It's because if you want to offset HHS, we're not going to be able to do it with a parking lot over here. So I just would add another line that says, additionally, we support blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
But otherwise, I'm fine with what you have.
Yeah, I think it's a well-written letter.
And it's on tonight's agenda for approval. The deadline is Monday.
Yep.
So can you look up a technical term for that and put it in there? You put aggregate what?
And as far as I know, that is the technical term.
Okay.
Do they accept correspondence? Can it only be mailed, or do they accept it through email?
We got to upload it to the IUB system.
Okay, so we can do... All right. I just, when he said Monday, I'm like, we're not going to get that done, but we can do it that way.
So it'll
we vote on it tonight, and Josh can upload it tomorrow, right?
Okay, perfect.
How much more addition do you think there'll be on that? The reason I'm asking is that I think you get much beyond a page. You're not going to read it.
I think it's just one page, so right now.
But it has to be from somebody.
So
usually the chairperson signs it, or where do you want it from?
It's done in a memo, so it's from all of us. I mean, because is that what their system wants?
I saw all types of letters from private citizens, you know, or just basically a white sheet of paper, you know, sincerely, you know, Pat Harney, or and some other stuff I saw from governmental entities, you know, that had them, chairperson signed them or the mayor signed it, or it just wasn't signed at all. So however we want to do it, I think it's just the message. That's.
I'm fine with the way you're doing it if you just add, keep that
whatever.
Line. The new line?
I'm good with it.
Okay.
I think it looks strange without something, but whatever folks want to do, that's fine.
Without a signature block?
I don't really care.
Add a signature block.
As long as we can get it done in time.
Yeah. Can Angie add a signature block? Okay.
Pat Harney on behalf of the Johnson County Board of Supervisors.
Yeah. Typically, you want your writing in a what I'd call a bit of a letter form. Usually want it from somebody.
Okay. We'll make that happen.
But we can still vote on it tonight because the words are all the same. It's just the format.
Yep.
Whatever.
I didn't know for a comment if this was clear that it's from the whole board.
Yeah. I mean, it does say from, but if they want to respond to it, that's okay. They write
so,
to
you. If you want, I can walk this over to Angie and have her do her thing.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And if it's not done tonight, that's fine. We're voting on the language.
Okay. We will have it done tonight. Do it myself.
Hey. Thank you. That's all for you, Josh?
Ah. Sure you don't want to stay a couple more hours?
Oh, I'll come visit you later tonight.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Okay, next item.
Bring some food.
Laura Schramick with the just to well mark for incorrect charges.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Laura.
Hey. My item should be a lot shorter. A week ago, I received an email from Naman Harper, who is our Wellmark insurance rep, and they discovered an error that coinsurance amounts were being calculated off of the maximum allowable fee instead of the actual charge for office and independent lab services by Iowa providers. Now, when they discovered the error, they corrected it, and that was effective May 22nd. But looking back to the first of the year, we have 437 people that are impacted for a total amount of $16,740.70. And just to give you an example, if you had an office service and it was billed at $100 and the maximum allowable fee was $80, you should have been billed $10 for the coinsurance, and instead you were billed $8. So we're talking about that $2 there. And you add up all those $2, and that's how you get that $16,740 number.
I'm sorry. It's calculating off the maximum.
allowable fee.
So our employees are going to owe $16,740 more?
One, yes.
Tough. I mean, I don't.
And we need to decide what to do with that.
Well, I don't think it's really fair to go back and punish the employees when Wellmark screwed up.
Right. My recommendation would be for the county to absorb that cost.
Okay. All right.
Yes. But I didn't want to make that decision.
I think that's fair. I mean,
when you figure it's an average of $38 per person, and you know, now you have $2 for it down there. So it's going to take the doctor's office time to mill it, and then you're writing a check for $2, mailing it back.
Well, plus flex benefits come into play.
Yes.
That, I don't know, it just seems like, oops. And
I mean, it's unfortunate, but it just shows you that everybody, you know, can make a mistake. And this was in the computer, in error.
So, with your recommendation, this would just come out of our employee or our insurance pool, and we would not go after the employees to get it back. That seems fair to me.
Is this going to change their withholding then for future insurance?
No, it's corrected going forward.
So, well, wouldn't we be if it doesn't, wouldn't we be short at the end of next year?
Well, no. If the county wouldn't step in here, the employees would pay that amount.
Okay.
But we don't anticipate our insurance pool will be dramatically affected.
We always have a balance.
Yeah, so.
Right. But this is really minimal compared to what we're looking at, you know, $6 to $7 million.
That seems like the best thing to do.
Seems logical, then.
It does, but if you look at it from the other, you all know if it was the other way, we'd be giving those employees money back. And so,
that's true.
It's
when I first read it, I thought that's what was going to happen here, and then we were going to have an even bigger mess because flex is automatic.
Uh-huh.
So they've already, you know, if you have flex, you were.
Yeah, the alternative of this is certainly not one that I don't think any of us want to go down. Sir, I don't. So I'm comfortable with your recommendation.
Thank you.
It'd be nice if they do that. We did that for them. But
we might want to let them know so that this should be a good morale thing that we didn't come after you for $2.
Right, we can put it in the JOCO.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Thank you, Laura.
Thanks, Laura.
Well, Laura, while you're there, and we're talking about the insurance, at one time, I think it was Bob Saunders that told me that, you know, if we were at 500 employees, that our rates were considerably cheaper than if we got down to this 437 or whatever. Is that still true?
That is still true. And currently, Pat, we're at 492, and so we're just below the 500. But Wellmark still gives us the 500 discount.
Okay, good. All right, thank you. Okay, next is FY15 grant agreement for $6,000 with Iowa Valley Resource Conservation and Development to develop a food enterprise toolkit.
And I have this on, I wasn't here when you met with the folks about this, but agreed to the $6,000 and you amended the budget to have that amount in Department 20, so I want to get that paid yet in this fiscal year. I asked if there was discussion about an agreement, and I don't think that there was. So what I've done is basically it's a version of the traditional block grant contract that Lynette uses for the flex and emergency block grants to cover sort of one-time expenses because the traditional block grant that's paid in installments has something about ending payments, and obviously we're making a one-time payment. There are the usual provisions about you know, being able to look at their books and et cetera, as well as putting in a reporting requirement. So I have this on tonight's formal and just wanted to put it on here in case there were any questions or anything
else you wanted. I mean, this is how they want it done, that Iowa Valley is the recipient?
The fiscal agent.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
And I had been waiting because they were going to have a contract with Iowa City, but Iowa City's contract wasn't ready. And so I wanted to get this done and get it out. And so, Jason has looked at it, and he's sure Iowa Valley is fine signing it. So.
Sounds good.
Okay. That's why that's on.
Thank you. It'll be on tonight. Next item is the West Side Wellness Room. Terrence asked to have that on.
Yeah, I did. I just wanted to let folks know this is the direction I got from the board, so I just want to make sure it's clear that JEC employees will be able to use both the West Side and the HHS location, and that we would have them sign similar agreements like we have with our state employees. JEC is comfortable with paying for their access cards, but that we would not ask them for any future investment of machines, things of that nature. And that was pretty much it. So is everyone comfortable with that?
Okay. So, I'm sorry. Jack should get an insurance rebate for having this, right?
Well, yeah, I mean...
I thought when we originally talked about it that they would use some of that rebate money to help us get good equipment.
Well, we can ask them for money, and they're willing to do that. But the last direction I got from all of you was...
It actually doesn't matter because it's still out of the same levy. I mean...
Right. I mean, it's just a matter of do we want to charge them or not, and they just want to know what the direction is, or at least Tom does, and so... The last inclination I got from us was they can participate in either place that, you know, as long as they purchase the access card and sign the agreement, similar to how we handle the state, then it is what it is, and then we'll just invest. That room out there, because we've already budgeted, it's very small. It's probably the size of two of our offices. Yeah.
How much money do we have? We put $10,000?
Yeah.
And how much do we need to make that room nice?
No, it'll be $10,000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there won't be much more needs after that?
I don't think so. Mm-mm. No, other than just care. The only other expense that we're going to look to, and we're going to do that anyway, and that is security cameras at the entranceways and just accessibility issues for employees. But the same goes for any employee that wants to go over there. Not that they would.
No, I have one wrinkle, and I don't have an opinion about it, but we allowed state employees to use this wellness room. Are we allowing state employees to use that wellness room?
I would assume yes.
Okay. So, I mean, I just want to, because we need to make that clear.
I just think it's a two-way street. It's just a matter of accessibility and security. So.
Because anyone who's authorized to be out there will be able to open the gate and open the door and into the wellness room and the bathroom shower, and it's a single bathroom shower.
Yeah,
and they can't go anywhere else, but they do have access to the grounds, which is why I do think that security cameras need to be in place.
You need to identify yourself for the auditor and for the
Diana
public.
Diana Krems, our public health.
Thanks.
Are we better off not doing that simply because, I mean, do we need to? I guess I can understand if you lived out by West High and you work at DHS, maybe you'd rather go over. But, I mean, maybe just because of the gate issues and stuff, maybe we should just limit it to...
We gave state employees access to this just because they're in the building.
Right. So why do we want to give them access to that?
I think one idea is they could just be told if they wanted that.
Request it.
And
that way we can track.
Rather than changing the coding on all
on everybody.
Those.
Yeah.
But all county employees and all JEC employees
can go either.
Will have access to this building, to the elevator, to the third floor, and that's it.
Correct.
And they're already on camera when they do it here. But we do not have cameras. And then you would have access to the gate and to the one door.
Right.
And nothing else out there.
I've already talked to Eldon about cameras, and he identified having a camera in the exercise area, one at each gate, and one on the fuel island.
Yeah, and the fuel island's a separate reason than...
Okay.
But...
Would there be any security concern having JEC employees able to come here, even if they could just get through?
No.
No, my bigger concern was I don't understand why anybody from...
Here would go over there.
From DHS or juvenile court in particular would need to go out there and mess around with the... I want to minimize that gate.
Yeah, that's fine. But if they requested, we would consider it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good...
If the person says, I live in Walnut Ridge and it's handy for me.
Yeah.
I mean, we just did it to be neighborly. You're in our building, our buildings, you get to work out. And because at first it was like, well, are they even allowed to, like, use the kickball or whatever? Like, can they participate in something in the lawn and the walk? And I'm like, sure, of course. And
right.
And then we found out they were already working out.
So we're just getting clarification so that we would have JEC employees purchase their own access card, but that they would not be investing anything further at this point, that they would have access to both rooms, and that we would be discussing the issues of the security camera. And that was pretty much... where we are right
so,
now.
Okay. Jack's going to pay for it or the individual employee?
I don't know.
Because, I mean, do we really want each person coming in with a $10 bill?
No.
Or is Jack just going to get billed $200 for the 40 cards or whatever?
Yeah, I mean Tom will have to have permission, but that makes the most sense.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if the Jack board would be upset with that investment, considering the potential of what their employees are going to get plus the insurance break.
And we're saying $10?
Whatever the cost is.
There's a replacement cost. I thought it was $10, so I just made that up.
Okay.
I don't know what it is.
I think it might be $7. $7 is what it actually costs.
It's $7, I think.
So just $7.
But they would sign an agreement similar to the state employee.
Yep. Well, the state employee really just signs the same agreement that the county employees do at this point.
That's what we would be looking
for.
And then a mechanism to inform when an employee is no longer there. That's the other caveat that's a little strange. Same with the state. I don't know if they're doing a real good job of letting us know.
To deactivate the badge?
Deactivate a badge.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a problem we need to get on top of.
So they don't have the same system in place that we do? They
should, but I don't know if they're doing it.
So in other words, when an employee is no longer there, they need to inform HR.
It seems like
somebody.
To me that the state agencies and JEC should sign an agreement with the county that they will notify us if an employee leaves to deactivate the card.
Does Eldon get those back? I don't know.
We could just turn him off.
No, right, but I mean, does he get back keys and stuff? Does he, I don't know. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to, but I don't know if it's happening.
But I don't know about state employees.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. He's supposed to from them, but it's not certain to me that actually.
So
can you check in
Matt
with Eldon
for
about
access
it?
With the wellness
and see if this is a concern at all? But Jack would be a whole different matter because they're only getting access to wellness, not parking ramps and stuff like that.
Right, but still, if they don't have, if somebody did leave, say a disgruntled employee left Jack, you wouldn't want them having access to.
Yeah, Jack has to notify us that they've left employment.
And I would
think
the same with the state. The other issue,
Diana,
that we just discussed was we had allocated $10,000. It sounded like we were going to, it was going to use up most of that, right, for that facility. Yeah, that's what I thought.
You have no needs this coming year up here. We're good. And will $10,000 get us a good start out there?
Are you interested in seeing
it? Yeah.
We have...
Hold that thought until you're on the microphone.
So I had a
somebody from Push, Pedal, Pull come out, somebody I've worked with in the past, and he put together a quote, talked to Greg Parker and myself about kind of what we were looking for there, and it was Greg's recommendation to have two treadmills versus a treadmill and maybe two different types of pieces, two different pieces of equipment in addition to that. So this would be for two treadmills and an elliptical. And those three pieces of equipment would be refurbished equipment, so we would get them at a significant discount. Those are up to, you know, they're, if they need new parts, they're inspected, given new parts and everything like that, and they have a warranty on them as well.
And one of the reasons Greg's actively involved is primarily because of Chris Henze, who is a former owner of a gym. I don't know if y'all knew that. So he was very active in the process here.
Yeah, I think he said a lot of his employees are very excited about it. So that's...
So this is a $11,500. Do you have the money in wellness or...
Well, what this would cover... So for the $10,000, we could get the two treadmills, the elliptical, and then a functional trainer, which is a weight stack.
Oh, so this is a bid. You're not going to take quite everything on the bid.
Right.
Okay.
So I had him add in some of the extras, some of the smaller pieces of equipment, the resistance bands, posters that show people what exercises to do, things like that, that we can add on. But for the $10,000, we can get those four big pieces of equipment to get started.
And then you, when we start talking about budget later this year, if there's, I mean, we phased in that one too over that's, like 4 years.
Right. Kind of look and see what people want and then what's not working.
Right. And really for the $10,000 investment, we will populate that gym.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, it's not that big.
It's not like we're going to be able to add a lot. It would really just be some of the smaller things, light dumbbells, things like that, that we have, you know, a small amount of room for, we would be able to add them in, but also not priorities that we would need to do day one. So that is kind of what we were thinking.
So I'm a little confused. Mm-hmm. The 10,000 is in FY16.
Yes.
So do you have any remaining money in FY15 in wellness?
No, we've put in all of our orders for...
But have you spent everything we gave you?
Yes, so we've actually purchased two pieces of equipment for the gym.
No, so, but for anything else in your committee, have you spent every penny?
We've spent the majority of it.
Well, you might want to, like, crunch it down, because if you have a few hundred dollars...
If you have a couple hundred dollars, go ahead and...
Go ahead and spend it.
Okay.
But no, there was some additional bigger money that wellness... You bought a stair mill or going to? Did you buy the Precor?
We didn't buy the stair mill. That we couldn't afford. We bought a stepper and an upright bike to add to our...
So maybe stair mills FY17.
Yeah.
I would go to finance ASAP, have them pull your committee's budget and anything you had outstanding. And if you still have a few hundred dollars, you might as well spend it.
And really, what is it?
And then order this on July 1 because... Well,
time.
We can't pay the bill till after July 1. You can order it anytime you want.
Right. So would the $10,000 go directly into the employee wellness budget, or would that be a separate line item?
You're going to have to talk to finance because I'm not clear where we put it. But
if you have any additional dollars, I think you're getting kind of the go-ahead from the board here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Before, the 15th.
Get some of these extra pieces.
But we're talking like in the next couple of days, our deadline for any expenditure in this fiscal year is vastly approaching. Right?
Yeah, I'll have to look. I'm pretty sure we about spent it.
Objects
all,
in the mirror closer than they appear.
It's very close.
Yeah, if you got it, spend it. That's why we budgeted it.
And then for this, would there need to be formal approval to go ahead and purchase it?
No.
Not if
to budget it.
We budgeted it.
Budgeted, you've got the consensus. Go ahead.
Okay. We've always kind of, on big ticket items, typically departments will give us a heads up, even though it's been budgeted, hey, this is what we're planning to do. And I don't know why we would do, you know, that would be more like just in the department head report.
Or just like you did here. Here's a list of items we're buying.
So with all this, when are we thinking it would be up and running.
He said if we put, if I kind of say, hey, you know, he knows our budget cycle. If we say, you know, July 1st is when we can officially put the order and he can have it ready to go and he can have it delivered soon after, but the sooner we...
I mean, I think you can order it. We just can't pay him till July 1st, technically.
Right. So we wouldn't get it till after that, after yeah. we paid, but he could have it ready, so as soon
mid-month
as...
Mid-month or something, we'd be set?
Yep.
So cool.
And August 1st.
And you're working with Eldon, Sherry, of course, is on the committee, so as far as any electrical issues, things of that nature, but as far as access of that for Jack, we'll make sure the security cameras, I'm assuming
yes.
Eldon wants that in.
And then as far as an agreement for Jack, how do you want to proceed with that?
I will bring that up on the Jack's board agenda next week. So if you want to come in, maybe you could, if you wanted to come to that meeting.
When is that?
I'll email you the stuff.
Okay.
It's at 7:30 in the morning.
Do we have any concern out there as far as safety on weekends? Here, there's people going, coming and going a lot, not necessarily out there if something happens with someone or...
I don't think it's going to be any different. I did talk to Greg about that as well, and we kind of figured it would be the same type of liability. He said, and we'll put this in the wellness waiver that people sign to use that room, but if don't... kind of the same deal as that. On the weekends, don't expect snow removal. You have to avoid parking right in front because that's for emergency vehicles.
I was more concerned in the room if something happened to someone.
It would be the same.
And the county attorney wrote the original waiver. I mean, you guys, wellness drafted it and then they changed it, but
it would really just be adding.
The bottom line is you can be sued for anything that someone wants to sue you for, but they created the waiver so that, in theory, you can't. I mean,
that's the big thing now. Is
yeah.
It's employer liability.
And it's a gym, so people are voluntarily using the equipment.
Though it does bring up a question, though. Have we ever done an audit that we are sure that we have that signed form from everyone?
Not since I've been here.
Who has the signed forms?
I do.
So that might be just a whole mechanism of making sure that we know who has what. And
we can just send something out to all employees and say, now that we have a new gym, we are requiring a new waiver that's going to add both in, and then we can start from that.
And let's put in there, in the new waiver, that the roads won't be plowed, the sidewalk, I mean... You're on your own. If you go out there and get stuck, don't complain to us. I mean, because...
Yeah, your secondary roads, plow them yourself.
But, you know, a city slicker goes out to the West facility and gets stuck, yeah. And then they gripe. So I think let's make everyone sign new waivers. What's the harm in that, to have both rooms?
And run that new waiver by the legal staff.
And then I'd like to also build it into orientation with HR, so... Regardless, it's not a matter of who's using it. It's if you're an employee, you have one signed, and then we don't have to worry about.
It's a good idea.
About getting it.
Okay.
With the audit, that would be a little challenging because you'd have to either compare with the swipes.
You'd have to compare it to the swipes.
If you don't, people use that for other reasons, so it'd be a little tricky.
Yeah, I'd rather just start from scratch.
And are you good with Johnson County West Side Wellness Room? Is that what we're officially calling it?
I thought that
sounded good.
That just kind of came from...
What do we call this one?
Our conversations.
Wellness Room?
Just the Wellness Room.
Okay.
So we could have an East Side and a West Side, or just HHS.
Yeah. Main Campus.
Main Campus.
Central. What do we call this? Central Campus?
I could bring that.
Until we build a Justice Center, I think this is probably it.
Central Campus.
Yeah, do anybody have a preference on that?
No, but I like West Side Wellness Room. That sounds fine.
Sounds fancy.
That's because he lives on the West Side.
WWF.
He lost his East Side loyalty. I'm glad we're doing this. I'm glad we're investing in wellness. Prevention is really important, and self-funded insurance and in workman's comp. This saves us money, and... And every Fortune 500 company is doing the same thing now, and most governmental entities are headed this way. So,
yeah, it's great, and it's wonderful to be able to offer this opportunity out to the people, secondary roads and seats, because even though they do have access down here, if they don't live down here, it's not convenient for them.
Sounds good.
Is there anything else?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
June 26th, by the way, Diana. June 26th, Diana, is Friday morning. It's when the group meets out at CHECK.
Okay, next item is state and federal legislative issues, including update on Urban County Coalition, pending legislation affecting Johnson County, and representation of county and individual positions.
I copied you in on an email that I've sent to the legislators to work on scheduling a meeting. It looks like the responses that I've gotten so far, anyway, it looks like we'll be able to get something on one of the existing work sessions. So I'm still waiting to hear from a few more on that. We will not have a coalition call this Friday, but we will next Friday, and they will... The last email indicated that they were considering the last week of the month to see if there was a time we could get the counties together for a face-to-face meeting. I believe that this is the time, I think we did this last year, that we changed the personnel on the committee with the upcoming chair and vice chair.
Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah. So when do I have to start putting this on my calendar?
Well, the last email said they were that on Friday we'll, I mean, I suppose, well, you guys can fight it out if you want, but I mean, it could start as soon as a week from Friday. We're going to start looking at scheduling a meeting at the end of July to work on 2016, start to work on 2016.
That's when I think. At a minimum, I mean, Pat can't wraps, schedule for Janelle.
Pat wraps up this, and then I come in the July thing.
All right, Rod got that, too. We got that from scheduling the events and the meetings.
All right, so Pat will wrap up June, and then I'll come in and play in July? Okay. Not Rag-Bry week.
But... So why are we all getting one of these?
Well, just so everyone knows about it. So
that, yeah, I just figured Andy would be doing that. And so I mean, so. Just that you'll be looking for dates from us.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, right. And I think that I have a hunch, and I can clarify with them. I don't know if he's meaning, you know, kind of the representatives from each committee.
And not the whole committee.
Right.
Yeah.
So I have to talk to Larry and Gary about them coming in for a work session sometime. So I think I'll work on the meeting with the legislators, and then if you guys want to have a separate conversation.
Well, do we have on the list this whole definition of a erroneous action? I can only assume we'll want to have some understanding of what that actually is in the future.
So... talk about the schedule a bit. I saw the email to our legislators. Did you come up with a time then?
Well, I mean, I haven't. The ones, the three that I've heard from, that includes two senators, is pretty much all the dates work.
Then I just think you have to pick one and go.
No, I know. I know.
He just hasn't given them very long yet.
Right.
Okay.
The others, too.
And that was basically Wednesdays, right?
Yeah, I gave them the Wednesdays, and those for most, those worked, and Senators Bolcom and Dvorsky agreed they'd like either 10 or 1. So we'll take one of the existing work sessions. I'm thinking maybe July
1st. 1:30?
What?
1:30?
Well, we could, yeah.
Yeah, because if you take July 1... we're scheduled 9 to 11:30 and 1:30 to 4.
That's how I just assumed all of them are.
Right.
Officially.
Yes.
I just was checking on availability and also offered in the early morning. and then to check yes. you guys on yeah. what else would work.
Yeah, because we've done it at 7:30 because people had to go to work.
Yeah. But, so, but two of them has suggested specific time, so. So anyway, I'll get that scheduled in the next week.
And then Larry and Gary want to come talk to us as a group?
Well, I mean,
they've done that in the past.
Right, they've offered it, and so I thought that'd probably be helpful.
And you would just plug that in on a Wednesday? And then the new Urban County Coalition group would have a in-face meeting in late July? Yeah, because you got RAGBRAI, which you guys can go ahead, I just can't go, and then you got County Fair. So late July is a problem in our county.
But I don't know that it, I mean, realistically, you know, they don't have to pull this together till about November. I'm sure they want to start
right.
early, but.
Right. Yeah, we can ask for the first week in August.
Or yeah.
Okay. Let's see. So that's what I have. I don't know.
I do have a report. Because yesterday was my first meeting as a member of the Supervisors Legislative Policy Committee with ISAC. And I thought it was really important that everybody knows that I was really pleased with the fact that Bill Heckroth, I thought, went out of his way to acknowledge the Urban County Coalition. As it turned out, this was not the intent, but this is how it worked out. I was the only person there from one of the larger counties. I was also the only Democrat. And Bill said that was not how he intended it to be, and even gave the option of maybe sending everybody home. But I said, well, that, no, you know, people have traveled here. We'll just do it. I think I can handle it. And the group didn't try to, like, force anything through. It was a very collegial group. So what we ended up with, it was pretty much an all-day meeting. We came up with four top priorities, and those were in order: MHDS funding, property taxes, inmate medical expenses, and TIF. And then, of course, each of those priorities, you know, has a statement under it and several.
What was the third one?
Inmate medical expenses for jails. Then, of course, there'll be a whole booklet of other policy things. We'll get a draft. Committee members will get a draft of it here in about 10 days. And when I get it, I'll share it with you all. And then you know the process. It just gets voted on and et cetera, et cetera. So.
I didn't get down. What was the last one?
TIF. So that was that.
Can I ask, you were the only Democrat. Why would he want to send you home? And they just he felt there should be a better balance?
He was concerned that I might feel upset about the balance, that there was, you know, 9 small county Republicans, and, you know, he just was trying to be sensitive to
that. Change the people.
There were people who didn't show up.
Oh,
there were people who didn't show up.
I remember the meeting with Klein, State Representative Klein, where all the supervisors are in the room, and he told Rod and myself, we're on the same page, and he told Rod and myself we were being partisan. And I said, really? Because I think we're the only 2 Democrats in the room. And when it came down to it, every supervisor there was a Republican but us, and every supervisor there was of the same opinion. But he turned it into, quote, a partisan issue.
Yeah, there really wasn't anything that, I mean, people aren't stupid. They know where there are partisan differences, but for the most part, most of these issues have already been fleshed out, so it's really just, here's existing language, what do you think? You know, it worked fine. So when I get that, I'll share it.
Okay. Internal processes, expectations?
You want to go ahead? Sure, I've got a couple things. The first one, I just don't know what, ever happened to this, because I thought we were going to discuss it, and I don't know what happened. It kind of went away or whatever, but I'd still like to talk about what we're doing with pesticide or herbicide use, like here. I mean, I know that there's a well-defined plan for roads. Conservation has a well-defined plan. I'm talking more like within Eldon's department. I don't think we've really had that discussion. I thought we were going to have it, and it just hasn't happened, and I'd just like to have it at some point.
That one there, I thought it was the concern that the group brought in was about the treatment on the yards, but I thought Eldon came back and said they weren't using anything that was any pesticides or weed killers or anything. That's fine. We can have a discussion.
I'd like to at least have him say that then, I guess.
I saw some.
And it's on my list.
Oh, okay.
Eldon's had courthouse and ambulance.
Yeah, Eldon's got a lot going on.
It's on my radar.
Yeah. The other one that I had that I just thought was a pretty important thing to bring up to the board. So sort of a two-part thing. On the MHDS board, they've come up with this. It's called Iowa Helpline. And this is basically where you call the crisis center. This is how you get into the system, essentially. And so there's all this. It's actually a really nice, you know, kit with stickers and magnets and flyers and, you know, cards that you can put in a holder, that kind of stuff. I think it's all good. We've never really done anything like this. None of the counties had, but there's a firm that does media marketing stuff in Cedar Rapids that we contracted with this. These kits and the stuff in them, not everybody gets a whole kit, but has cost about $20,000. So, you know, it's a significant expense, but it's also spread across, you know, 600 some thousand people. So it's a big area. But now there is a proposal to spend a whole bunch more money on, for example, radio, outdoor billboards, pizza box tops. You know, so the idea is, well, do people with who need crisis mental health services, where do they get their information? The only thing is, it's just a lot of money, and I'm very concerned about the amount of money. My inclination right now is to vote against both of these proposals. One is the bigger one is $176,000, and the smaller one is $100,000. And I just think it's pretty hard to justify spending that kind of money on something that's not service related, but this conversation will be happening. I just wanted to let people know my vote would be to not do any of it. My vote would be to. I'm okay with what we did with the.
Yeah, the kit they handed out, but the other one, is that sponsored by the state or by each region? To me, it should be a state thing or paying for rather than the region if they're going to spend $100,000.
Well, it's not a. You mean like the hotline?
Yeah.
It's just ours.
Just ours.
Yeah, it doesn't. So you could, I suppose you could technically, because it's an 800 number, you could call it from Polk County or whatever, but they would end up referring you someplace else.
Automatically transfer or whatever.
Yeah. Well, it'd probably be the person at the crisis center, after they learned where you were at, would have to give you another number or something.
But, okay, so it's not on the agenda. But when you come from the south on 218, there's a new billboard there that has a phone number on it of crisis something. And I thought it was the new phone line that's going into the crisis center.
I've seen it.
Okay.
I'm going to have to pull it aside.
I don't think we've paid for it. So anyway, yeah, it's not necessarily for discussion. I just thought this was a big enough deal. It might get publicity, it might get press. I wanted you guys to know that it was coming up. It'll be voted on in the July meeting. And if you want to talk to me about how I'm thinking about voting, feel free. So that was that.
Then I just had a couple things. I will be out of the office on Friday and Monday. So I've got the department head agenda pretty much ready to go, but if you have any additions for that or ideas or updates for any committees that you're on, we'll just have committee reports on. On Wednesday, the architects, Justin was here yesterday meeting with ambulance and in their facilities, and so they're working diligently. They don't see a need for, they won't be coming in this Wednesday. They'll be coming in the 24th. Just an update. It's not anything about slowing down. It's just there wasn't a need necessarily for it. There will be a closed session on real estate on Wednesday. And I also just wanted to let you know, I forwarded a couple emails about the spraying at the county farm. I just wanted you to know there's a whole lot more emails. Everybody's working well together. The problem's going to be resolved. There's a lot about soil content and such. I'm not copying all of those to you unless you want them, but I just wanted you to know that there is communication. I think it's going very well, and they're actually working on setting up a meeting in about a week or so to talk about that, which probably would have been a good idea earlier on. But anyway, so the farmer is going to take care of any expenses related to it. And so I just wanted you to know that communication was going on. And I think that's all I had on internal.
Anything have under? Other? Well, anyone?
So, Andy, you sent an email about this international student website or something?
Yeah. It's not student, but international. International welcoming
organization.
People who are coming to town.
Or are in town.
Yep.
And I'm happy to answer any questions or put it on an agenda if there's...
So forward your thoughts to Andy.
Okay. Any other besides us? Okay, we will be adjourned.
So, Rod, I'm taking over for ICAD in July.
I think that's the plan, yeah.
Do you have the dates? Do you have any dates there? The 10th? I have something down for the 10th. Look at July 10th.
Go ahead and lock the doors.
Thanks. We'll be back in an hour, right?
I do not have July 10th down.
Okay. So maybe they told me something. Well, anyway.
Okay.
Sherry will send something over.
Yeah, I'll touch base with them and double check. See what.
Cool. Thank you.
What they say.
That's the only one I can think of that's had a general taken over.